Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Javier, we've got you for the whole show, and we have a lot to talk about. And as a New Japan specialist at PW Torch, it is a great week to have you on. And I want to begin with your reaction to Okada showing up on Dynamite and being a late addition to what was clarified as a four-way match for the IWGP title with Adam Cole, Hangman Page going after Jay White.
Well, I was got to say I was kind of caught off guard because I thought that the whole point of giving putting the belt on Jay White was because Okada was not going to be available because he has family issues. I thought he was going to not be on the show. And because they like promoting based on the ROH show that the New Japan did, they kind of like heavy, you know, emphasize more the non-Japanese talent when that show happened way back. So I thought that it might have just been, you know, that he wasn't going to be in. So when I heard his music start, I'm like, oh, it caught me by surprise. I thought it was cool.
And that woman in the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
That they zoomed in on.
And then I then a little bit of like worry and disappointment because I heard that it might ended up I had heard rumors that don't get your hopes up for an actual title match, that this might end up being a tag team match, but this is the first time I've actually been happy to hear about a four-way as opposed to the other option.
Do you think they made it clear in the angle that it was going to be a four-way for the title, or did it take Excalibur coming out or Excalibur's announcement later to make that clear? Because maybe I missed something on commentary where they did say that, so I'm genuinely asking.
No, it was Excalibur because Excalibur is the one who announced the match. This is, you know, the match has now just been made. It's going to be a four-way. So
yeah.
You know, which is why up until the point that Excalibur announced it, I was like, oh man, if it's gonna, I mean, it'd still be cool if it's a tag team match, but you know, more disappointing than to actually have a championship, you know, the match, you know, be for the title. I was, but then when he announced it, I'm like, you know, like I said, it's the first time I've ever been like, yay, it's a four-way, not the other one. Not that that would be my favorite way to go, but hey, you know.
Yeah. I was left a little confused. Didn't Jay White say he's not defending against Adam Cole and he's not defending against Hangman Page and now he is? Does that make sense? Just because Okada ran out, that suddenly Jay White went from having the power to declare who he's going to defend against to now not having the power or changing his mind. Yeah, explain that, Javier.
Yeah, I think the idea is that he changed his mind after, you know, stuff went down. I think that was the general gist of it. You could also do the he's going to say he said he's not going to face him and he's not going to face him. He's going to face both of them, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think the idea was that, you know, because of what went down, he's like, okay, fine. You know, we're going to go ahead and do it. I thought that was the way before the Okada surprise. I thought that was going to end up being the, what was going to happen anyway, when they teased, I wouldn't say tease. I didn't really feel like a tease when Cole had the title. It's like, okay, you know, maybe Cole takes out Jay White, and then Jay White's okay, fine. I'll take both of you on, kind of thing. Before Okada showed up, so that was, you know, it felt like, hey, we got to get this together at the last minute. But and the thing is that I think it's a good way if you're just gonna have this four-way just to have it happen like this and just get on with it for the pay-per-view, because, you know, having, you know, like continuously explaining it if you had like another week in between, I don't think would be behoove the build to this match, because it's just, you know, hey, let's get these four guys, we're gonna have an exciting match, and, you know, it's a match for it being a match. Isn't that really like much build to it?
Yeah, and I guess that gets to another issue here is Is AEW, I mean, because there have been some criticism of Jay White. He pops in for, you know, a reason that isn't really ideal. I made a promise and I want to live up to something bigger, you know, than I was able to. And Tony Khan on social media. So let's have Jay White show up. And then Will Ospreay, you know, debuts on Rampage in a multi-man tag match, six-man tag match. And he's like this megastar, but all you get is a little lip service from Excalibur breathlessly talking about how great he is and Ross affirming it. And Shivani sort of nodding, and perhaps. And then, you know, now another tag match. And now you've got Okada showing up with less than a week's notice. His appearance is obviously super serving an audience that knows him and loves him. But it is shortchanging what Okada's, like, match could mean if they had built it up for longer. Now, the caveat is they're dealing with injuries. You know, and in a weak card, Richman and I talked about that on Everything with Richman yesterday for VIP members. The lineup was looking pretty thin. You know, where I was thinking some New Japan people who have been watching New Japan streaming service for a while might be iffy on whether they wanted to ante up for this show. You know, with Punk not being on it and Danielson's situation and Okada not on it and not really a bunch of dream matches. And so I get Tony might have been in a position to go, we got to strengthen this thing. Let's do what it takes to get Okada out here. And if so, it's a big save. You know, it's a big addition to a show that needed it. But there's still that negative, which is I can't think of the obvious cliche. The first impression cliche. There's not a second chance to make a first impression. Like, Okada's just thrown out there. Crowd pops. Announcers tout him. But it feels late notice. And it feels like if you're going to have a four-way with those four people, give me 4 weeks of hype, personality profiles, really make it feel important. And it does feel like it's super serving an audience that has a built-in desire to see that. And that is important. But it stops short of being the next level effective, which is tell the story of Okada. But they haven't told the story of Will Ospreay either, and Jay White a little bit more, I guess, over time. So your thoughts on that aspect of it, Javier?
Well, I mean, this feels like more because New Japan puts on like A-level events, which would be your Wrestle Kingdoms and your Dominions, which are like, you know, they're big cards. And then they have, you know, B-level events. This has like this feels more like it's a B to A-level event. It doesn't really feel like a strong A event. It feels like a good, like back when they had the In Your House, like a good In Your House, you know, card. And I think it is a lot due to injury because, you know, you don't have Bryan Danielson and you don't have CM Punk, which are, you know, I would say probably two of your more top guys in AEW. It does feel like, it does feel like it's more hastily put together. But, you know, and as a result, I think it is really designed. It's really relying on the hardcore fan and kind of like, you know, having them lead the charge in terms of, you know, to get other people, you know, to, you know, drum up more support for it. Ideally you would probably want, because I was reading an article where they were talking about how I think it was on Dark. Excalibur did the best build he did for Ospreay. You know, talking about how when Kenny Omega stepped away from New Japan, basically it left Ospreay and Jay White to carry the position that Kenny Omega had, which would be a great thing to have said for a wider audience because, you know, people who watch AEW would be, you know, would understand who Kenny Omega is. And if you say that this is the guy, you know, that Will Ospreay and Jay White are the ones that picked up the torch that Kenny Omega left behind, that really more solidified, you know, would give you a better idea on, you know, who you are, you know, who they are. And, and I'm pretty sure they're going to hit all this on the actual, you know, the show that they do, the countdown to, you know, show that they do, but, you know, a little bit more on the actual show, you know, this has been a thing we've been, you know, talking a lot, you know, it's a reoccurring thing that we talk about, you know, leading into the reviews, you know, a little bit more of this would be better in terms of, you know, to build up this sort of, you know, this, you know, toward the pay-per-view instead of having to wait until the countdown show the night before.
And the people who are going to watch the countdown show are most likely that top layer of hard or the core layer of hardcore fans. And I want more. And the audience you need to convince to buy a pay-per-view, especially with so many unfamiliar names or barely familiar names, where, you know, you're barely acquainted with some of these wrestlers and their backstory, and you don't really feel part of the club that just finds these to be dream matches that the director keeps cutting to in live crowds. you want to, you've got to tell that story, not on Dark, not on the Countdown special, but find time for it on Dynamite. You know, as Jake Barnett noted in his report over at ProWrestling.net tonight, and I nodded along, you know, Tony Storm and Marina Shafir didn't need to be on this Dynamite. That's the match. That's a match you can cut, or frankly, Hangman and Silas Young. Why is Silas debuting with no hype, no build, and jobbing right away when you could get more out of it if you built it up and then just throw it out there? You could cut either or both of those matches and turn this edition of Dynamite into a more less breathless, frenzied attempt to bring another layer of fans into the storylines. And I know it's just, I feel like when I talk like this, I'm self-conscious that it sounds foreign to people who are lining up to buy tickets and they're just having this dream night. Oh my God, it's Okada. Oh my God, there's a four-way, the title's going to be defended. And on and on. It's like, yes, I get that. But from the perspective of you want to maximize your buy rate, I'm just not sure some of the matches on Dynamite tonight needed to be there crowding out some hype. Although I would also argue it's just this, it's not too late, but it's too late to maximize the potential buy rate for this show just on this last week. And I know they've had some bumps in the road, you know, with some injuries. So all that's at play. Go ahead, Javier.
Yeah, and I would you say that the ones that have gotten the best build would be probably Jon Moxley and Hiroshi Tanahashi got, you know, a decent amount of build for that, and then Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy, because everything else, and I guess FTR, United Empire, Roppongi Vice a little bit, but then, you know, a lot of the other ones. Also, I think it also has to do with, you know, they're bringing Japanese talent that are, we're only talking about them, like Minoru Suzuki being involved with Les Sex Gods, and the Young Bucks all of a sudden going to be teaming up with the Bullet Club, and oh man, what was the name that they called them? I saw it on the card, and I cracked up. What are they calling Darby Allin's group?
Dudes with Attitudes.
Yeah, Dudes with Attitudes, like the most 90s name ever. I love that. You know, and then, like, you know, because they just said, oh, we're bringing Shingo Takagi and Hiromu Takahashi, and I'm like, nobody knows who these guys are. You know?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, I myself am like, okay, that's cool, because I was wondering, you know, because it felt like, you know, there was no Los Ingobernables mention at all, and all of a sudden, you know, like, it's that one little promo that Darby calls out, and Shingo is one of the best wrestlers in New Japan. For him to be just like an afterthought, like he was, you know, kind of surprising. I mean, Suzuki you get away with because Suzuki had been showing up along, you know, a lot. So, but yeah, Hiromu and Shingo. I mean, Hiromu is like one of their top guys for their B shows because he's their top junior heavyweight. So he ends up headlining him and El Desperado, which is another one who kind of like didn't really get too much of a shine when he showed up. Are like their, you know, they're like their linchpin for like their B and C shows as being their two top junior heavyweight guys. So yeah, I mean, these guys just got no promotion for like the, you know, for the people who don't know who they are. And I guess if you're going to just hide them, you know, in terms of, you know, they're just going to be more bodies in the match, you know, at least some of them, you know, Tanahashi is definitely going to be the star of this, I think.
I just imagine Tony Khan like making soup, and it's like, more of this, more of that, more spice, throw this in, let's do that. It's like just step back, you know, put the garlic and some of the spices in the pan with the olive oil, let them, you know, simmer a little bit to bring out the flavor. Meanwhile, you're soaking the beans overnight, and then you combine the ingredients and you stir, and then you add a little bit, you stir some more, you taste it, you go, okay, can use a little more salt or a little more of this. It's like, and like that, you get the most out of soup that way. Yes, I'm using a soup analogy for Forbidden Door hype and Dynamite tonight. But this just was like a frenzied guy on six cans of Red Bull just going, throw everything in and it's just like, it. I don't know what you were supposed to be left with the impression of at the end. I don't know what a person who did not commit to buying this event the moment it was announced, I don't know what if you interviewed them right now, that selling point for the show would be for them after a month of hype, given how AEW has told the story. Like, what have they done a good job building up, not by just repeatedly having Excalibur tout them and having them stare at each other, but something beyond that? What have they done? What has Tony Khan done in a month to make this show appeal to people who weren't already committed to buying it the second it was announced?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, outside of the – I think the Moxley-Tanahashi thing was decent. I think they basically messed around way too long with the Jay White, who's he going to choose kind of thing. Yeah. And I think it's just because they don't want people to really be disappointed in the fact it's just a four-way. And don't, you know, and the thing is, like, I who have experienced a lot of Okada, this tells me this is going to be Okada in shorts and not really exactly putting on his best, you know, we're not going to get the best Okada in this match, I don't think. So, one second. Yeah, so I don't think we're going to be getting the best Okada in this. I think that might be why they're just like, you know, and I mean, and honestly, Jay White mentioned that Adam Cole's lost twice to Adam Page, which is another thing. And, you know, so Cole's been pretty much on a losing streak, and Adam Page is coming off of a lackluster match. So I don't think that – you know, I think John Moxley and Tanahashi would probably be the closer, would be, if I'm guessing, which is why I don't think they want to put too much emphasis on this four-way and just have it like, okay, this is going to be a four-way, it's going to be a fun match, and then, you know, Jay White will retain, and then we'll move on from here. I think that's what everything signposts that match to be. And then, like the other, like I said, the other matches is just been, you know, Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy, and I guess like and overall that the United Empire versus Chaos stuff.
So I will repeat my question.
Yeah.
What did they do with Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy that made somebody who didn't commit to buying this event the moment it was announced need to see this match? I understand they did what qualifies as an angle, because I think there were 17 angles on this show, but what stands out about it? What do we know about Will Ospreay? What has he shown us besides look at all the cool moves and athleticism and cockiness? And that's not nothing, but it's not everything. And Orange Cassidy, back from his injury. Okay, how does he feel about this U.S. title? What's the story of him earning the shot? What does it mean if he wins? Does he have a chance to win? Can we hear from him? Like, slow down and tell us a story. Build some layers to this. The sidebar that you went on Okada, when my question is, what have they done to make people want to get the show, is to me evidence of there's this big blind spot with Tony Khan that surfaces for a show like this if his goal is to attract more than the people who committed to buying it the second it was announced. And I mean, Zack Sabre Jr. came out for that? To just yap a little bit, so the announcers could then again tell us, trust us, he's great. I mean, you know, even Moxley and Tanahashi, yeah, I agree it's the best type because Moxley is just great, and he cut that promo, and you just want to see anything Moxley does right now. And Tanahashi, you know, he's limited in terms of promos, and he's not this, like, bad dude that people just are going to hate. So in a way, there's only so much you can do with it, which means you've got to lean in on other matches and get people – invested. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Young Bucks aren't in it. I don't think the casual fan can tell you who the Young Bucks are facing after the show. I don't think they can tell you. Yeah, right. Yeah, so I emphasize it. Same thing with FTR. Like, okay, who are they fighting and what's their story? It's just, it's a parade of people coming to the ring with the director looking for those fans in the crowd who are getting wide eyed, jaw dropped. Oh my God. That validates, I think, with Tony, look, this is great. People are loving it. But it's this echo chamber that might turn out to be bigger than I'm imagining. It also could turn out to be smaller than Tony Khan and company are imagining. And we'll find out.
Yeah, the with Will Ospreay, I think the match he had with was it Dax he wrestled? I think that's a match that captured people's imaginations and made people interested in Will Ospreay. And I think that the Orange Cassidy stuff today was mainly to show that, you know, because he hasn't been around for a while, that Cassidy can do stuff and kind of more whet your appetite of what. I don't think it's elevated to make you want to get the show, but I think that they were already in a hole when they announced this, because like I was surprised. I'm like, oh really, we're doing Ospreay and Cassidy? But you know, I think they dug themselves out of a hole. I don't think they really climbed and pushed much. Yeah. But at least, you know, I'm damning them with faint praise. I'm aware of that, but
you know, and yeah, I mean, it felt like the whole, you know, Roppongi Vice being involved with United Empire and FTR. I think a lot of that felt like it was more done in New Japan with Rocky Romero showing up to attack to attack United Empire over there on, I think, Dominion, I believe. So there was even more done over there. So yeah, this is definitely a show for, like, you know, the people who really know what's going on, and for the people who trust Tony Khan to put on good matches. You know,
and that's the thing. You can look on paper and go, hey, this is going to be 4 hours of just great action. And for the most part, yeah. That's sort of like a given. I just don't know. Yeah, I just don't know what the audience growth is for that. And that's what I'm advocating for. You know, I mean, like, I feel like I'm advocating for an improved buy rate, as opposed to being, you know, the yes man who's going, you know, the hardcore fans are so excited, great job, Tony. And I'm sure there's plenty of them out there affirming things. But like you said, you can't name some of the opponents in some of these matches on the show. So anyway, there's a lot more to say about the show. We've gone long in our opening segment here. So let's pause and introduce ourselves and get on to some other topics here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, the first draft of wrestling history for over 30 years. Go VIP to read our back issues and read about how we reported on pro wrestling's biggest stories the last nearly 35 years in a contemporaneous real time, if that's not redundant. I edit the website pwtorch.com. You can find my live TV coverage Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights for Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and many other articles throughout the week by our great team of contributors. One of those is today's co-host, Javier Machado. Javier has done a VIP podcast on New Japan off and on for, is it years now? When did you first start?
I definitely covered two G1s, and I'll be doing stuff for the G1 again this year. I just not like I did last year. I was actually doing an episode for every single G1 night card, and that nearly killed me.
I didn't have to sign you that duty, by the way. I'm glad you did it. It was great.
Yeah, no, it was on me. Yeah. It was a challenge I gave to myself in the first week. Cool, because it was like every other day was a match, but then when we got a thing of like five nights on 5 days, it was like, oh my god, if I'm about to die, I can only imagine the wrestlers. And then this year they're doing four blocks, and it's really weird how they're doing it. I'm still trying to wrap my brain, because I think they're gonna have like different matches from different blocks on specific days, and it's really weird what they're doing. So still trying to wrap my head around that, but I'll be covering some of those probably like once a week, maybe whatever happened during that week. So
very good. So let's give out the phone number and the email and get on with the show. You can give us a call if you're listening to our live stream here. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will play you on the switchboard, and we'd love to hear from you. So let us know that you want to be on the show. 347-215-8558 and push 1. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We will have we're expected to have an outside correspondent later in the show, Javier, and we'll find out what it was like in the arena, and that should be a good segment as always. I do want to read an email from someone who was in attendance but could not call in because he's meeting some people afterwards. And this, we can use this as a launch point for some discussion points now. Chris in Milwaukee said, the crowd was incredibly hot for the Christian promo. You could only just hear him. I think he might mean you could barely just hear him. And then he says, people were excited for the Okada surprise. Definitely adds some major star power to Sunday's event. I'm going to it, and I know that I'm looking forward to it a lot more after tonight. Three, the second biggest pop of the night behind Okada was probably FTR. That's nice. I think that Dax match with Ospreay you talked about, I think Javier helped elevate Dax's star power, and they've just done a good job with them lately.
That was actually my note, because it sounded like that was probably the loudest pop of the night.
Then He said there wasn't much of a reaction for Will Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr. It seems like a few people didn't know who they were. Five, the Danielson promo was a bummer. People were a little confused at the end as well with him not revealing who his replacement is. My guess is Johnny Gargano because of the technical wrestler gimmick and given the treatment of Ciampa on Raw. I can't imagine Gargano going back to WWE. And six, attendance was definitely down since last time they were in Milwaukee. That's not good. That show had been a pre-pandemic show that got rebooked and was Punk's first Dynamite, so it makes sense, okay? It had a really weird main event of Black versus Arn Anderson's kid with a Lee Johnson running. That is not helpful for coming back to the city when that's the main event. All in all, a good show that got me more excited to go on Sunday. And then he sent a follow-up note. He said, Nyla Rose's crowd interaction during the women's match was absolutely fantastic. She doesn't often get a lot of credit, so I thought I'd give her some. She really kept the crowd engaged in a match that was otherwise a bit of a beer break. So I want to jump into a couple topics that he brought up here, and one of them is the other top story of the show, which is a Bryan Danielson promo. AEW had advertised for days. He'd have an announcement about his status at Forbidden Door and for Blood and Guts. He said he's got good news and bad news, and the bad news is he won't make it to either show. The good news is if people who are worried about him having to retire, that's not an issue because he can read 500 words a minute. Okay. And he can sprint a half a mile and not break a sweat or something like that. I'm not quite sure that will convince doctors. You don't think I can wrestle? Look, watch me read. I get his point with the concussion stuff, but
yeah.
It came across like he was being a little defensive about something that the TV audience had not been introduced to when the thought hadn't even crossed their mind. Even though he has history with that,
I think it was designed for the people who know he has an issue, and he's basically hey, look, it's not a head thing. I don't know if it is or not. I don't know what it was, but my head's okay. I think that was him kind of his way of saying that without actually saying it.
For sure, I just think there's a less defensive, weird way to do it.
Yeah,
which is, and I'll propose this, Javier. I have an injury. I have an injury that's gonna. He can specify it, by the way. I mean. Why not tell us what it is? It makes it seem like he's hiding something, and it's worse. So tell us what the injury is, but if he's not going to, either way, go, I am not going to be medically cleared in the next week for action, but the injury that I have is not career-ending, and I'll be back soon.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That's it. We don't need about sprints or 500 words a minute. Like, it just felt a little loud out protest too much.
Yeah.
a little weird. Yeah. You know what? And I don't kick my dog when he's sleeping. Like, okay, we didn't ask. Like,
yeah.
Just tell us you're not retired. So that was a little weird. And yes, I mean, Samoa Joe's out. CM Punk is out. Kenny Omega's still out. So many champions are out. Like Red Velvet now. It was like one promo after another, which was just talking about injuries.
Buddy, I just read Buddy's out too.
Yes. So first of all, maybe rein things in a little bit. I think there's an inefficiency to the high spots in AEW that it just feels, again, like a sugar rush that is not a particularly efficient way to tell your stories and keep fans excited. It just I mean, it's a broad generalization, and I'm sure there's some specifics that have nothing to do with how many high spots they're doing, but they really can't slow down. I mean, you don't need to be doing this many spots. And by the end of the show, it feels like such a blur sometimes. But it also is just emotionally a bummer. I mean, the Dynamite rating last week was, a big drop off. And it wasn't just, it came the week after a show that was on here 2 weeks ago. It was the most highly criticized show in a while. On The Fix with Todd Martin the next day, Todd was very down on AEW. And that episode in particular, but it was, culmination of a number of things. And so you had what was a bad disjointed show in the hype for Forbidden Door, but you also had CM Punk announcing, oh, I'm not going to be around for a while. And so you have this big drop-off, and everyone's like, well, it was the Stanley Cup playoffs. Okay, I bought into that until Monday Night Raw popped a rating up against the Stanley Cup playoffs on Monday. So It feels like AEW has been a bit of a bummer to watch lately, and I don't think a high density of continuous dangerous high spots that might exacerbate the problem and lead to more bad news is exactly the solution. So as much as I'm looking forward to Forbidden Door and what they do with this presentation, and as Jim Ross hit hard at the end, a dream card, and it is in so many ways. From a booking, pacing standpoint, I'm just ready to get back to, you know, Team Taz and Keith Lee and Christian and Jungle Boy and giving that, I mean, they had plenty of time. We'll get to that in a moment, but giving that feud more time and just, you know, just focus, just more focus and less frenzied run-ins. Like the brawl at the end of Dynamite, Javier, was just, it was sort of symbolic of a lot of the hype for Forbidden Door on Sunday.
Yeah, and there have been a couple of those, haven't they, on the way here?
Yeah. So the Danielson news, though, missing the show, but a mystery person. Johnny Gargano and Cesaro seem to be the two main wrestlers being speculated about. What do you think, Javier?
Yeah, Cesaro was the one I had down. It just makes too much sense. It's the whoever it is apparently is joining the Blackpool Combat Club, and that just it just fits Cesaro just way too much.
It does.
A brawler. The only I hadn't thought about Johnny Gargano. The other one I had was Jonathan Gresham because very similar style to Zack Sabre Jr. And they've gone back and forth before. But the fact that he had said this guy's going to be doing great things in the future made me seem like someone that they've signed but haven't announced they've signed, which makes me think Cesaro is the most likely candidate.
And I think that's a good signing. I worry he'll be around for 2 weeks and then he'll be lost in the mix. I don't want to sound cynical. I'm just sort of acknowledging history and something we're learning about Tony Khan and the Sugar Rush signings that he has, followed by a come down where we either don't see them or they're just not really focused. So I am concerned about that. But if he's in Blackpool Combat Club and Danielson is out for a while, he didn't really even give a hint of a timetable, then he'll be, you know, featured and, you know, hanging out with Regal and Wheeler Yuta and Moxley is a good way to stay in the spotlight and in the mix. It's a good signing. I want it to be maximized and stay the focus for more than two or three, you know, more than 1, 2, or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Decision not to reveal who it is and Danielson going, I came out the heel tunnel. What'd you think of that?
The heel tunnel thing was just weird. I think that was just him covering why I'm not going to tell you because, hey, I'm going to tease you. That just came across really, really weird. I think they knew that him not revealing who it was going to disappoint people. And I think that, you know, so yeah, I probably would have gone a different direction. I just haven't had time to think about how I would do it. But, and then just the fact of not revealing it. I mean, Cesaro is not someone who's going to, you know, if he said, oh, it's Cesaro, it's not going to draw more people to watch it. I think the surprise would more draw people into it. And if it turns out to be Cesaro, you know, people will be pleased with that. So, you know, so it's not someone like, you know, if you had said like it had CM Punk not signed yet and said, oh, it's right. you would announce CM Punk, obviously, to get people to go watch it. But if it's not, then, I mean, granted, they didn't do that, but that's a different story. was probably a bad example, but you know, you understand what I'm saying. So, you know, so like, I think that would be a, now if it's being like Christopher Daniels, as much as I love Christopher Daniels, then people would be disappointed.
wow. Yeah.
You know, just because he's been around for a long time. I think Cesaro is like a good, I think you might announce Johnny Wrestling, you might announce. So, Johnny Gargano, that might be someone you probably would announce and get more, you know, cause I think he is a lot more beloved, than you might actually draw a couple extra people.
I was going to move on, but let me ask one more thing about Danielson. What do you think just about the overall promo, the delivery, the energy, and the purpose that it served? If we kind of step back from the specific of the tease of who it'll be, but not revealing it in the heel locker room thing, just in general, obviously it was a hook for ratings. It was nice seeing Danielson hold court of the ring again. I'll add to my question before throwing to you, like just seeing a professional promo guy stand in the ring and hold court and exude that charisma and that sense of authority was refreshing because we don't get that a lot in AEW. And I think, you know, a lot of what Tony Khan does is trying to be different than WWE, but there are some things that can sort of halfway on. Hey, we got a ring introduction followed by a commercial break, Javier, for the main event. You know, we don't see that in AEW much, if ever. So, you know, there are things WWE does that make sense, and you can have your strengths but feature them better by not pushing so far away from some of the things that WWE does, and that having some of your top stars cut those in-ring promos a little more often, you know, like Christian did tonight too. I just think those things stand out and you remember them. And when we think about what are people going to think about coming out of the show, it's what did Bryan Danielson say? And then Christian Cage and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus in that issue, neither of which are involved in our actual, I mean, Danielson's hyping appearances at, but he's not in it, and Christian is talking about a feud that's not part of the pay-per-view either. But in general, I am for more of that. So, yeah, your thoughts on the Danielson promo.
Well, I mean, with how it petered out at the end, you can't really, you know, give it, like, you know, 5 stars. But I think the fact that he was delivering bad news and he was delivering bad news and he did it in a way that was palatable, I thought was definitely a plus sign. And I've been, like, my biggest criticism about the Blackpool Combat Club is the fact that they don't give enough time for Moxley and Brian to talk. When Brian's doing the talking, I'm seeing Moxley not doing anything, you know, just like, you mm-hmm. know, pacing the ring. I'm like, dude, I want to hear what Moxley has to say too, and get him in there. I think it's like, you know, if you're only going to be given a 15-minute segment, like I'd rather each of them have a 15-minute segment than like split a 15-minute segment between them. So it was good to see him, you know, do his thing. And you know, it was bad news, you know, so it kind of like, you know, kills a little bit of the mood, particularly, I mean, not even so much for Forbidden Door, although, I mean, that would have been my dream match would be, you know, so I'm not getting that, Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. It's also because of the big match the following week, the Blood and Guts match, too. So, you know, so, I mean, because you could deal with Forbidden Door, but it was the next one that's kind of like the real bummer. But, I mean, and considering his health issues, probably for the better. But yeah, I mean, it was, I thought it was good, and I would like to see more. And just, you know, it's just the, both A, the content, and B, the fact of it petering out with the whole, you know, thing. And yeah, I at first I didn't really care, but I kind of wish they just stopped the, oh, I came out of the heel side. That was kind of, you know.
Yeah, that's dumb. I mean, I don't like heel. I like heels and baby faces as a structure in wrestling that guides the vast majority of feuds and promos, because I just think it's natural. You should have wrestlers that fans like and are rooting for and are invested in, and they naturally would be drawn to try to take out or react to wrestlers who fans, you know, are not wanting to cheer on to success. And it feels like it's not something that should have to be explained, because it's part of every you know, movie and fiction book and video game and on, heels, you know, heels and faces or heroes and villains. But so I'm for that, but I'm not against actually having tunnels. Like, I just think that's too cute by half. I know, you know, Impact Wrestling did that with the 2-tunnel system, you know, a dozen years ago, whenever it was. And it was just sort of an eye roll then. And I still find it to be an eye roll now, and I don't pay a lot of attention to it. And I don't really see a purpose for it. I just wish they randomly came out of either side like a Plinko game, or you don't really know what's going to happen until that happens.
With the tunnel thing, I actually fine with it if you're not signposting it. Because, I mean, if you're not signposting it, I mean, it acts on a subliminal level. You're not really paying attention to it. You just end up always seeing, you know, I mean, it's almost like it's the same thing with where the heels and the faces stand in a tag team, you know, which corners they're in. Where you're usually having your faces, you know, facing the camera, obviously, because you want to see their faces. So it kind of makes more, you know, so it's more of a subliminal thing.
Right.
But when you start signposting it, you know, that's when it starts getting like, okay, this is getting a little bit ridiculous and meta in that respect.
Yeah, I could meet halfway on that, although I'd still say just come out randomly. okay. By the way, we have a bunch of people who have called in. Nobody's pushed one on their phone right now. That's one of the reasons I'm going longer with Javier. So if you do want to be on the show, there's no wait. Just push one, join in the conversation. Vociferous disagreement with my views or Javier's are welcome, or you can back us up or change topics. So I just want to signpost that for people, a strange situation where a bunch of people have called in, but nobody's pushing one. It's also possible there's a switchboard issue, in which case email me if you have pushed one and we're not seeing it. Javier, the on-site correspondent who emailed, and again, we'll have an in-person on-site correspondent in a bit if all goes as planned, mentioned the Christian promo. I will start with my only criticism, which is I'm not for heels getting heat by talking about dead parents. I just think it's too much. I don't like it with Drew McIntyre, and I think didn't Drew and Sheamus do that where they're talking about Drew's, I don't know. So, like, just we don't need to go there. Like, this was a really good promo. I think, you know, getting into it with the sister and the mom is plenty enough heel heat for a wrestling promo. So I would have vetoed that myself. I thought it distracted from the promo and felt too heavy-handed, even though it got a gasp from the crowd. Christian is good enough. He doesn't need to resort to that. I'll put it that way. That said, this was Christian showing up, and actually, I do have another criticism, but Christian showing up and saying, this is how we do a big-time promo. In pro wrestling, you know, this was a veteran holding court, and I think probably a little inspired by his, you know, lifelong friend, but also friendly rival, Adam Copeland, and his recent heel turn, trying to show I can do what he does. The other criticism I'll throw out there, though, is I did not need Christian saying the reason that he's great and credible is because people talk about his matches, you know, more than a week later. I think that's a point of pride for him that he's part of those TLC matches. And he said, you know, mentioned, you know, they named pay-per-views after them. But it was a weird sidebar. I didn't know if it was aimed at MJF or others when he said, if you want to earn my paycheck, try having a match people are talking about more than a week later, a type of match that changes the industry. To me, you know, like, wrestlers should stay in the mode of I earn money because I win matches, not because I have high star matches or memorable matches. You want in the context of the show, you should be talking about I earn the big bucks because I have a history of winning big matches. So Javier, your thoughts? I know I threw a couple negatives out there, but also some positives. What did you think of the Christian promo?
Yeah, I liked it overall. I toned a little bit down because I don't like when they just start going after the town, you know, kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, that's your thing, yeah.
That's when I actually made the connection to Edge's promos, where he was, you know, doing these spooky promos, but yet still taking a shot at the local sports team the middle of these spooky things.
I guess I have a third criticism then, because I'm with you on that.
Yeah, because I mean, in this case, it was a heavy thing, and he's just, you know, but yeah, I think overall it was really, you know, really well done. I give this a little bit more of a pass in respect to what he said about the match than the MJF one, because the MJF, you know, he was talking about specifically about you guys are, you know, dropping each other's on the neck, not making people feel. That was definitely more of an open one. In this case, he is talking about a specific match that, like, got, you know, really way over that, you know, that. You know, like you said, to change the industry. So, you know, that he was trailblazing, you know, he was a trailblazer and sort of thing. So, and that could still be fit kind of into the whole sports thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, the fact, the thing is, that I don't even, he mentioned that. And I'm like, I don't even remember who won that match. He's talking about the TLC. It's like, you know, I don't even remember who won that match. I just remember that it happened and he was in it. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think overall the father comment is definitely low hanging fruit to get, you know, like you said, to get a gasp out of the audience. I'm not as, because it felt like you don't need it. If I were looking from the point of view of a wrestling match, like, you know, Ric Flair, it was a wrestler that, like, he would wrestle a match and, like, okay, he could win, but then he cheats to win. This kind of felt the same way, where, like, man, this was a good promo. He didn't need to go there. I don't know if I'm more angry at him because I was in on it. You know what I mean? I was all in. I think if you're not totally in on, like, you want to see him get his ass whooped, if you're not totally in on that, then that's like, oh, this is whatever. You know, he's cheap heat. But I personally was into the moment. So when he said that, I was like, oh man, that was just like, you know, why are you going to go there? You creepy little bastard. You know, that was, you know, so I had a more, you know, visceral in the moment reaction to that moment. And, you know, that was good because I usually don't get that in, you know, because everything else he did to set it up was good. The ending was weird with Luchasaurus. I had,
yeah, yeah.
take on that. I remember there was a thing between them at some point a couple weeks ago. So I don't know if that was supposed to be signposting something along that him taking over Luchasaurus's mind. And also, like, really weird saying, you know, like, almost like he's almost saying, like, I'm your daddy now. And mentioning, you know, don't forget what happened to Marco Stunt, which is now, like.
Uh-huh. That's part of canon now. That was just not talked about now.
So, you know, yeah. I'm interested. I'm interested to see where they're going. And Chrissy made me interested in seeing what he's going to do next, which is no mean feat because, sorry to break it to him, he's no Edge.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's going for it, you know, definitely deserves, you know, I definitely give him a thumbs up to see. And I'm really curious to see where this is going on from here.
Yeah. Did you think the comment about people complaining about their pay was a shot at MJF?
Yes, and I would also – I'm guessing that that whole MJF thing also might have been other people maybe on the same once MJF started voicing his displeasure, some other people might also have in the past. Because I think it is because, I mean, he's – I think it – you know, he is one of the better, you know, compared – he's like if you're going to CM Punk is worth the money. Whatever they're paying him, he's worth the money. Daniel Bryan, wherever they're paying him, is worth the money. If they're paying a lot to Christian, and I think the other name I remember hearing was Henry. I think might have been another one who's getting paid, you know, a lot.
Yeah.
Those I think it was, you know, since he was getting. I think that when people think MJF is saying some of the WWE people are getting paid a lot, I think more people are thinking Christian Cage than they're thinking, you know, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk.
Right. Oh, yeah, totally. And Keith Lee, you know, also probably is on that list. Maybe Malakai Black. So it was, yeah, I mean, it was, there were plenty of talking points for us in that promo from, talking about why turn on Jungle Boy, which, by the way, talk about holding a grudge. Because when was that? Was it a year ago?
Yeah, I mean that. I was when I heard that. I'm like, I'm trying to do the math, and I'm like, wow, what a. I mean, again, that was one of the things that kind of really got me into, you know, what a dick. Because it was like, it's something. I mean, it's something I would do. Hold a grudge for that long, play along, and then get somebody like, you know, you remember that? You remember that time you cut me off in traffic like 7 years ago? Wait, what?
Yeah,
that one, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. It's a great villainous thing to do, and it's awesome that he would hold this petty and it's a petty thing, you know. It's a petty thing, so you know, it's just like, you know, great. It works.
I like the line. He didn't come back to AEW to elevate younger talent. He came back to earn a ton of money, and that's the only reason. So that's good. That's what kind of led into his comments about MJF, or not about MJF, but that made me think of MJF, which is, you know, why am I getting paid more than some of you people?
And that made me think of Booker T.
And why?
Because he did that. That was exactly what he did in Impact.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then was proud of it.
Yep. And yeah, exactly. And bragged about it. So. I think Christian's going to get heel heat. I think he pushed, you know, a bunch of buttons. I think he pushed, one button more than he needed to. I think he could have implied that Jungle Boy's mom is interested in him and been more subtle about, you know, and Jungle Boy, you know, she's watching and, you know, she sees you looking at me as a father figure. I think there's just tons of implied heat already for people to know about, you know, Jack Perry's situation. And you don't need to actually explicitly do it to go there to get the heat from it. And I think it works even if people don't know, you know, who Jungle Boy's dad was and that he died. I think you can still get heat just from implying, yeah, your mom's got the hots for me. She wants me, she sees us together as a father-son type thing. And then let Jungle Boy be the one who says, don't you be talking about father figures with me. I got one father figure in my life. You know, like that's for Jungle Boy to get fired up and reply with. But Christian has from day one in AEW come across as somebody who had this in him, this type of chip on his shoulder about, you know, the TLC match was named after me. And when I walk through the locker room, people look at me for advice and can't believe a star of my stature is in their presence. I mean, his babyface promos were so arrogant at the beginning, coming across in a way that I don't think he intended, but I think it was a window into how he feels, or he was just laying the foundation for the heel turn. But I'm glad it's happened, and that's the type of thing that I think is going to help, frankly, AEW grow more viewers than more people from New Japan or ROH or Impact getting into big brawls while Excalibur breathlessly tries to explain who they are to you. What Christian did there, even if we have some issues with it, is what draws money in pro wrestling.
Yeah.
At the higher level than what AEW is drawing right now. And, you know, coming off a really bad ratings week, I think there's a little more oomph to that criticism where you go, okay, yeah, I think there's something here that if you're Tony Khan, you should step back and go, okay, I've been doing it this way. Let me see if there's another way to do it. And I think we saw some signs of that tonight, honestly. I mean, we had more promos. We had the even the ring introduction with Jericho before going to a commercial break, which I feel like had to be painful to do, but also I think it's smart TV production. Although, by the way, the kid, I don't know, was he like around 9 years old, chanting, was it F him up?
No, my brother just texted me that. It was he texted me a LMA about the AEW cutting to the little kids chanting "shut the f up."
Yep. And so the director cut earlier to a man and a woman, and the man was looking at a cell phone.
Yeah, I caught that.
Why are you cutting to that? There was another weird crowd shot that I can't recall right now. And then they cut to a 9-year-old yelling that. Like, no. I mean, I know it's cool and it's a gift. It's like, oh, that's hilarious. But, like, you don't want to give the impression that you've got 9-year-olds coming. It's one thing to get, you know, like Rossa, oh, it's live TV, folks. But I do not agree that you draw attention to that up close, that AEW is where 9-year-old kids go to chant, shut the F up, when there's very... Like, I was at SmackDown last Friday, and there's a ton of dads and sons, and it's, like, appropriate. You know, it's, like, it's not uncomfortable. It doesn't feel wrong. And, I mean, if it's, like, a 14-year-old kid, who cares? But, like, I don't – it just – Why I thought there was some bad judgment on the crowd shots on this show.
I actually missed that. I missed the kids until my brother texted me because I would AEW, you know, we're bad parents bring their kids to the show.
And it's not like a big deal, but it was sort of this accumulation of bad timing and weird cutaway. Oh, I know the other one I thought of, again, not a big deal. It's more cumulative. They cut two fans, one of whom was wearing an Austin 316 t-shirt. And I don't think you should, like, oh, we're so scared to show, you know, a t-shirt that we don't sell that is from another company. But, like, there's fans everywhere. Can't you – is there no one in a Hangman shirt who's cheering? Is there no one in a Young Buck shirt that's cheering? Is there no one in a Bullet Club? Yeah, like – just pick an AEW. There's fans everywhere wearing t-shirts. Why would you go to an Austin 316 shirt? Again, not a big deal, but cumulatively, I'm just scratching my head going, like, who's making the decisions here? And those were the only crowd shots. Like, it's not like there's 12 and I'm picking out three. Those were the three cutaways, and they all were weird. So.
Well, I mean, I hate crowd shots. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had that discussion with other people before. So.
Yeah.
I'd be happy if they never see them.
All right, so again, our number is 347-215-8558. You are invited to give us a call and push 1 on your keypad. We'd love to hear from people who are disagreeing with anything we say or want to underline anything that we are saying and add your 2 cents. And we've got a couple people who have pushed 1, and we will get to them. We're going to go to Brian's in Boston next, but up first is area code 312. 312, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. 312. If you can hear it, if you.
Sorry about that. This is Chris. Just walking out of the show.
Oh, great. Hey, Chris, do you mind if I take one other call and then come back to you while you
get
settled?
Yeah, please. Of course.
Yep. That's our outside correspondent who was scheduled, and he called in about 7 minutes earlier than we scheduled. It was a rough number. So let me get Bryant in, and then we'll go back to Chris and hear about what's like in the building directly from him. Bryant, thanks. Let's hit the right button here. Brian, thanks for calling in. Brian from Boston, what's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
I thought the show overall was pretty good. I still I still will be glad once the pay-per-view's over and we can finally go back to normal again. Just, you know, I think that rating last week really didn't have anything to do with the Stanley Cup final. I think it was just, you know, some people tuning out, you know, and it was you who brought up that point in that Everything with Rich and Wade podcast about how, like WWE used to have things going and then they just kind of stop it with that stupid brand supremacy bullshit with Survivor Series. I was kind of nodding my head when I heard that. Of course it could have been the All Elite After Show I'm thinking of, but I like the segment with Okada. It was nice. I mean, if you're going to bring anybody in, it should be him since he's like the kingpin of NJPW. So I did kind of enjoy that segment, you know, and like you said, the promos and the build-up were good, but they should have started this like right after Double or Nothing. And, you know, because, I mean, the show overall was pretty good and much better than the one 2 weeks ago, but I just can't wait till this whole thing is over because I got to be honest, other than like Takeshita, I really don't care about NJPW, to be honest. Because, you know, AEW has such a big roster and, you know, you got the all-out PPV coming up in early September, Labor Day weekend, I believe. And, you know, you should be focusing on your own guys and building up the storylines for that, you know, and wasting a whole month with this. Great. But I really did like the Malakai Black Penta match. That was really good. Wondering what you guys' thoughts were on that match.
Javier, what'd you think?
The Malakai Penta, it was good. It was nice to actually have two people who are around the same area on the card and actually having a finish, which, you know, seriously, when it happened, I'm like, wow, you know, Todd's right. It felt like a while since you've seen this. I had a little bit harder time getting into it because I knew Penta was going to lose because they had already pretty much announced that Penta was not going to be allowed to be on the Forbidden Door because apparently Mexico still has a key and locks some of their talent out of it. I'm really kind of down on the whole AEW Atlantic Championship, not just because of another title, but because, you know, seeing, you know, Pac and Malakai Black 1-on-1, something I'd rather see. Watching Miro versus Tomohiro Ishii 1-on-1 is something I'd rather see. Watching Miro versus Malakai Black 1-on-1, you know, I'd rather see all these guys wrestle 1-on-1 as opposed to have a 4-way in this one.
I thought you want to have good action. It's part of the AEW brand. But it just sort of has the stench of you're doing the All-Atlantic tournament. No one really understands. Well, I shouldn't say no one, but there's so much happening that they said what it was, but you didn't really have a chance to get. I think a Penta versus Malakai Black match should feel more important than a 9-minute qualifier for a tournament in a way. I don't have a big problem with the match because, again, if you're AEW, you want good athleticism. And just cool matchups. And so that had that going for it. I think in the end, you know, with Miro on the big screen and Pac mocking out, it felt ultimately like a show where there's a little bit too much going on throughout. And so a match in a segment that could have landed a little more solid, had a little more solid landing, I think got obscured within a half hour with so many other things going on. So it's good stuff. There's good aspects to it, but I think it's an example of something that gets lost in the density and frenzied nature of the booking of the show. Also, it's hard for me to give to I can't look past when, like, there was a point where Black threw Penta into the ring and just shoved him, and Penta rolled and then twisted and then rolled backwards to get in perfect position.
Yeah, I think
for the top rope stomp.
I think, yeah, okay, that was the one. I noted that too. I'm like, this was way too much set up for this one.
And I just lose a lot of respect for frankly, I just lose respect for wrestlers who do that and are part of that. If Malakai is setting up a top rope move, then roll the guy into the ring and body slam him into the exact spot you want him and then run up to the top rope and hit the move. So it's on both guys. You know, if Penta was in a bad position because he gets shoved, so he sort of tries to look like he's rolling naturally, but then he looks up and he's like, he's off center a little bit. Well, first of all, it's a stomp. It's like not even that, like exactly that you're at a 45 degree angle to the corner of the ring. So just let him adjust midair. It's like, so I don't know. I mean, that kind of took me out of the match. It's there's a lot of good stuff in the match, but that I just kind of rolled my eyes like, you should never, never, never do that. There's wrestlers who just are always trying to think no one's noticing when they wiggle themselves in a perfect position. It's like, that's just no exception. Don't do it. Let the wrestler adjust, move you or adjust their movement, you know, when they leap off the top rope at you.
Yeah, that's what I loved about RVD, that RVD would say, just, you know, I'll adjust. Don't reposition. And then he would get upset when people reposition.
Yes, I know. Good for him. All right, Brian, back to you.
Yeah, I just think, you know, I mean, I'm not a fan of too many titles. But, you know, if you're going to add one, at least build it up and don't introduce it in the middle of nowhere. At least, you know, give it some gravitas, you know, and build it up over a period of time. So, you know, I mean, if you're going to add one, at least make it worth my while about it. Cause you know, it just, the All Atlantic title just feels like an afterthought, you know, it was just brought up without any fanfare at all. So
yeah.
Just,
yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to sound that horn again and let's get past, you know, let's get past what we have going on right now for the reasons you said. But still, yeah, I'm looking forward to just getting back to normal. And it's going to be a great show. It should be a great show Sunday. You know, like, I mean, I'm not discounting that. It's just I want to get back to Tony Khan's being given an opportunity to stay focused on so many wrestlers who just aren't the focus right now. You know, I want this company to be about – you know, about 18 wrestlers, you know, six men, six women, six teams,
yeah,
give
exactly.
or take a little bit on the edges and make them bigger stars and have focus and get us really invested in what they're doing. It doesn't have to be to the degree that WWE is doing it because WWE is doing it in part out of a lack of options. They just don't have a lot of depth, which is, you know, part of too many cutbacks and a lack of imagination on how to get the best out of people who they see flaws in. AW doesn't have that problem. They have a problem with just, you know, the sugar, Tony Khan getting the sugar rush out of signing anybody and everybody that becomes available. And there's just too many characters who I feel burned if I get invested in what they're doing because they might be off Dynamite or off TV entirely for weeks or months or just thrown in a match on Rampage. So I hope the numbers, the rating numbers aren't something Tony is just talking himself into thinking has nothing to do with choices he's making. And this is a good time to adjust after Forbidden Door. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, and it also, you know, and I think, you know, the Dynamite ratings were doing just fine until the whole Forbidden Door thing started to happen. I mean, you know, it went down from like 970 to around 930 or 939 or something like that. And then last week it went down to 766, and I hear the excuses, oh, it's the Stanley Cup final. No, it was not the Stanley Cup final. I mean, they went up against the NBA finals like the week before, which had 11 million people and still did just fine. But anyway, I'll hit my second point. Christian's promo was awesome. That heel turn was well worth it. I mean, he played the audience and everything, you know, he actually kind of fed into that whole WWE guy coming in for the money thing. And he played like the long term with, you know, with the Battle Royal festering and everything. So I just wonder what your guys' thoughts were on that promo. I thought it was great.
Javier?
Yeah, we already briefly talked about that, but yeah, it was just such a you could kind of tell that he got the same reaction that like what's his face Lambert gets, you know, where people trying to, you know, drown him out because, you know, they don't want to hear what he was saying. And, you know, you got the shut the F up a chant that, you know, that tells you that, you know, we don't want to hear what you have to say. So I thought overall it was great. I mean, yeah, the father line might've been, you know, over the top, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was great. And if you're losing MJF for a period of time, I mean, I think he's another. Christian Cage just is designed to be a heel, you know. So,
yeah, yes,
yeah.
Cool.
All right,
Brian. Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I'll just hit my third and final point. The women's division, like, I just can't help the feeling that they're rushing this Toni Storm. Thunder Rosa match, you know, I mean, Storm's connected with the crowd somewhat, but she needs like a little bit more time to really get over with them, which I think she will do in like maybe like over the summer or something. But I just think they're rushing this match way too soon. And, you know, unless they're planning on having it being like a drawn out series of matches, then it would be best to wait on that and give it some time for, I would say just build it up as a title match for All Out, because those are two of the best women on the roster, and like the rest, other than, you know, like Britt Baker and Jade Cargill and Serena Deeb, it's not really that close. So I'm just, and I also think they're kind of wasting time with Marina Shafir. Like, the crowd's completely dead with her, and they were trying to get into the match with her and Toni Storm, you know, but when you get someone as wooden as Shafir is, it doesn't really help. So I'm just wondering what your guys' thoughts were on whether or not they should be saving the Storm Rosa match for All Out. And with that, I'll hang up and have a good night.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. The women's division in general, and the specifics that Brian brought up, and one of them I'll mention here before throwing to you, Javier, is Marina Shafir. Like, you did a little bit of soundbite and vignettes with her, but for the most part, you got introduced to her by seeing her lose, with the assumption you know who she is, and there's some Ronda Rousey connection, and she used to be on NXT. It's like so many of the wrestlers that Tony Khan brings in and the way he features them is based on their history elsewhere. And she's been defined down before he had a chance to try to make her a bigger star or define who she is, because NXT and WWE never did that. And now they've got her in a match that didn't need to be on this show, that was, you know, already, you know, I mean, I guess he wants to have more than four matches on his show. But still, he doesn't have to. That doesn't have to be a rule. But then she's out there having a competitive match with Toni Storm, a commercial break in the middle, without fan heat. And that's not doing a favor to Toni Storm, who should be a huge star for you. Either build this match up better with promos and hype and give Shafir some wins on TV, or have Storm beat somebody else quickly. I just think the Shafir push is another example of something that Tony Khan does poorly. I think Silas Young, it's different but similar. He's this, you know, guy in ROH who people know, former TV champion, as Adam Cole threw in there, between that and saying he's no joke. Well, who was saying he was a joke? That's a low bar. Like, hopefully you don't sign people who are borderline jokes. Find higher praise if you're on commentary for somebody coming in. But can we learn about him? He is a personality, and he should beat some people before he loses to Hangman Page. I don't get putting him out there to lose to Hangman Page. Even if you never plan to use him again, then have Hangman beat somebody in 4 minutes who's a no-name. Like, I don't get this idea of, oh, this would be fun to put him in a match. It did it with Shafir, did it with Silas Young, and I'm sure there's other examples where it's like, use the name value they already have just for the novelty of seeing the match. So, Javier, your thoughts on that or anything else that Brian brought up?
Well, I'll just touch on the Silas Young thing real quick, since Silas Young was one of my favorite ROH characters, and the fact that he didn't cut any sort of promo beforehand, when that's like the best thing he's at.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that is, you know, and watching the match, I was like, he's obviously trying to earn a job, because he really went after it.
Yeah.
I mean, he really – I mean, I've seen a lot of – you know, Silas Young is not the type of guy. He'll do, like, a couple of moves that he did in the match, in each match. He went deep into his bag of tricks for this. He won.
Yeah. Look what I can do, Ma. Look what I can do.
Exactly. He really
it's
wants
like, it's like the
job.
Kid on a bike going, look, no hands. Like,
yeah.
He was doing all kinds of things for Tony out there.
Yeah, I mean, it was insane for, you know, with the amount of matches I've seen him in. And he is great, and I love him, and he's an awesome promo. But yeah, so I mean, I just want to say that I do hope he gets a second look. Cause like I would put him in the same like vein as Eddie Kingston, kind of guy who could catch that kind of attention, the imagination of the crowd. So, but yeah, I mean, but because of, you know, I'm just gonna segue that to the Shafir thing where it's like just put out there. He's got this weird music that just does not. You know, makes me think someone like the Virtuosa in Impact, Deanna Purrazzo, and it doesn't really fit her. And I like her style, like Shafir's style. I think there's potential there. I just don't think that the package is really working. And this is like is this the third time she's been on Dynamite or the second time? You know, and she hasn't really gotten over. Just, you know, you might want to like, you know, move on. You've got a lot of other women that have been doing pretty decent from what I've seen. So if you're going to have this match because you needed to have – I mean, I guess you had the whole Nyla Rose thing. You wanted to have Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm in the ring to promote the match on Sunday. You know, but –
but it's okay to have a planned, a planned match and then a planned segment as opposed to – competitive match that doesn't take full advantage of at least one of the people in the match, followed by an impromptu brawl or confrontation and stare down. Like, not everything has to flow into something else in a contrived but supposedly natural way. Just, like, be more formal about it. Just, you know, just have the sense that there's a championship committee who is, you know, making prudent decisions about who gets title matches and who gets and that there's a logic to the matches besides a bunch of people running out and arguing and staring at each other or someone interfering. So someone then wants to face them. I just think there's, in a way, there's just too many angles and therefore it waters down their effectiveness. And I think there should just be more things done just because somebody decides that it's the right thing to do because it makes sense in a competitive environment. More things by fiat instead of happenstance, I guess.
Well, and doesn't also help Toni Storm that she wins via a you know I don't want to say fluke victory, but like a
leverage roll up.
Yeah. Where I mean, you still won the match, but this one could easily gone the other way. So you're protecting Shafir. So
yeah.
I'm like, I don't think Toni Storm going into a match with Thunder Rosa. I don't think Shafir. And like I said, I like Shafir. I like her a lot. And I think there's potential there, but I don't think she's, you know, where you need to protect her against a Toni Storm. You know, particularly Toni Storm going into a match with Thunder Rosa. I mean, if you wanted to build something, have her instead of Toni Storm wrestling, you know, Shafir, have her wrestle Nyla Rose then, you know, and then that would be more of a believable one with a leverage victory over Nyla Rose. But yeah, it didn't really help as much. Like, you know, in a vacuum, I was fine with the match in a vacuum. But yeah, when you add, you know, with the fact you're promoting this match and you really need to get Toni Storm over for the Thunder Rosa thing, and I think that's why Brian was kind of like, you know, down on the whole, you know, it's too early for Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa. I think that might have something to do with it because, you know, it's not like Toni Storm is really feeling like she's on fire. I don't think she's dead in the water or anything, but I don't think she feels like she's on fire either. So,
yeah.
You know, and speaking of that, you know,
real quick, it comes down to Tony Khan deciding who he's getting behind and then get behind him.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing, you know, and I'm wondering if, because, you know, Thunder Rosa had kind of voiced her like displeasure as in how she had been getting booked. So I don't know if this is just give her Toni Storm as a good opponent or let's get the belt off of her and give it to Toni Storm, you know, kind of a decision. So I guess we'll find out when the match happens.
All right. Let's shift to Chris, our on-site correspondent, who attended tonight's show. Chris, thanks for calling in and letting us know what it was like in the building tonight.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you sound good. So we did get an email earlier from somebody who said the crowd was down from the last time they were in Milwaukee. Did you attend the last time?
I did not. I've attended like every show in Chicagoland, going back to All In, and I've thought about making the drive. I'm glad I did today because tickets are easier to come by than in Chicago. I'm not surprised. I'm not. You know, Tony Khan came out at the very beginning and made a point about. And whatever, you know, he says this every time, but, you know, about what a special show the one before, and Giannis, you know, MVP was there and how big it was, and he really thinks it's going to come close to that. And I was sitting with people that were, you know, big diehard Wisconsin, you know, independent wrestling fans and whatever. So it could have been. You know, I noticed some differences from the 9 shows I've been to for AEW more in Illinois. You know, subtle. You know, one thing I did, there was a lot more kids than I've ever seen at a Chicagoland show. You know, there were some stretches, the rabid, you know, famed Chicago crowd. But you know, it was not a bad crowd. I don't know how it came through on TV. Sometimes these audiences don't really, I still think to the very first year and the. What seemed like the sound mixing editing issues or whatever, but I think the crowd was hot. I think, you know, I'm glad I got to dial in and listen to that last caller. I'm again such a, you know, super fan, and also before as a Laps fan, I big into NJPW. I literally went to Japan for G1 Climax tournaments and whatever. And but I know that, you know, this last month has not been resonating for more normal fans, and some, you know, face group I'm in, you know, you just see people kind of complaining a bit, and so you know, sensitive to all that, but I thought it was a good crowd, and just even some of the 2 specific instances that were just raised that you guys were just covering, you know, Silas Young, I guess the you know, my thinking there is, you know, for a Dark Elevation match, it was, you know, obviously there's always the local enhancement talent, and there was some guy, Joey Jett or something, and everyone was going, you know, and this is when the crowd is half full, and you know, and this is setting the backdrop. This is University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Panthers State. This is, you know, this is not even like the Marquette basketball arena. You know, this is not the old Mecca arena, you know, kind of basketball. You know, this is not the biggest venue. I think I was talking to some Wisconsin, you know, wrestling fans. They pointed to the neighboring ballroom theater where Ring of Honor used to use. So I don't know. It's not the biggest venue for sure. You know, just seeing, you know, the half full crowd during the, you know, pre-6 p.m. kind of Dark Elevation, you know, and just the chance that came out for Joey Jett, I guess, you know, you realize there are hardcores and there's people that there to, that, you know, are active in the local indie scene. And it was cool getting to talk to them and kind of getting their perspective. Of course, you see the other, you know, New Japan fans, and you talk about that given your, you know, the t-shirts you're both wearing. You know, that was cool. And so I guess for Silas Young, just talking about that, I guess I just kind of liken this to when, you know, Tony Khan will have, you know, some old, you know, crippled MMA fighter who kind of lives near St. Louis or some, you know, ancient, you know, whatever regional, you know, kind of relic from prior wrestling, you know, in whatever regional kind of appearance. I don't know Silas Young as well as you all, and how much you saw him just trying out and whatever. But in terms of like not setting him up or investing in promo, I mean, I don't know. I just kind of assumed it was like a throwaway to the local and to kind of celebrate the regional diversity of wrestling, you know, the history, you know, when he has Crockett, you know, whatever kind of you know, the ancestor showing up to hand over title. So I kind of just took it as just like a nice little nod to the local scene, and I didn't begrudge not getting in, you know, some kind of story about who he is or whatever. I mean, it was only announced an hour before the match, before airtime anyway. So I thought that was fine. I thought also...
I guess it depends on what you think his potential is, too. You know, if you think he can be something...
I don't know. Yeah. He looks... He doesn't even... I mean, he doesn't... I mean, kind of looks like the Butcher or and, but doesn't have the height. You know, he's definitely got some age. He's got some age on him. And I do kind of remember... I remember from that... the last real man gimmick or whatever, but I mean,
right.
I don't know that there's much. I mean, he looks pretty washed. He looks, you know, maybe he's probably older than me, and I'm old, so I don't know. So I just assumed it was like a nice little, you know, homage to the local scene, and I've seen that in other episodes watching on TV, so I kind of chalked it up to that. The other point that was just raised about Toni Storm, you know, I don't know. I thought the crowd was into her. She really pops, you know, in person. And it's always, that's what's the beauty of going in person is you just reminded how damn muscular Buddy Matthews is. And you're reminded how tall Lance Archer is, you know, the airport test that people point out, you know. Or even like Great O'Conn, you're like, wow, Great O'Conn, you know, okay, fine. He had that flubber too, but, and watching New Japan, I don't always totally get it. He's got some math skills, but then you realize in person, like, oh, he's a big dude. Like, he's even taller than Will Ospreay. So, anyway, Toni Storm, I mean, gosh, just totally pops. And, at least, you know, maybe didn't carry through to the audio on TV, but I mean, I thought people were really into her. And, you know, I guess with Marina Shafir too, I don't know. I kind of like the music. Slavic, you know, kind of Russophile, kind of whatever vibe, and I like that she has this totally different style. Obviously, you know, there was the sandbagging accusations with Thunder Rosa and whatever. It's just probably styles clash, but you know, but I don't know. I mean, I just kind of think of her as like you always talk about the gateway heel, you know, the heel that's there to kind of set up the up-and-comer, just to be kind of
the
gateway
gatekeeper
for that up-and-coming face.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gatekeeper. You always talk about that. And I think that's what they're kind of using her as, and maybe then they, I don't know, maybe she's only got, you know, she's had a kid, and she's, who knows how long she wants to do this, I don't know. But I feel like, fine, maybe she's better suited for Rampage and whatever, but I like the weird music and the weird kind of judo style, and I didn't, when I've watched on TV before, it just seems like an awkward silence and the crowd's not into her. But seeing her in person, I kind of felt more like it was just like people were just kind of like, you know, it's like when you're at a baseball game and baseball's, you know, it's kind of a sport meant to be just sort of like just sitting back and absorbing chill, you know. And I feel like that's kind of, you know, her style. Fine, you know, of course, you know, in Rampage, of course, it's not a spoiler, but you know, Hook comes out, and obviously he has a judo style too, and it's totally different crowd reaction. You know, people are on the tip of their toes for everything and going crazy. But I don't know. I think there's something there with Marina Shafir. I don't begrudge too much. But anyway, you know, it was I thought a decent show. I was, watching that, and then, you know, I do definitely am sympathetic to the folks that aren't obsessive about New Japan and AEW and just kind of like running out of steam here. You know, the caller just before who cited like
Chris, did we lose you?
You know, Stanley Cup.
Oh, there you are.
No, can you hear me? Yeah. Sorry,
just for 2 seconds.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, Raw didn't have the issues with the Stanley Cup Finals. So I think it's clear also just, you know, some of the, you know, less diehard fans I know, it does seem like, unfortunately, this pay-per-view and build has, you know, exhausted some people.
What was the crowd like reaction like for Will Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr.? Someone who emailed earlier who was in the building said it seemed like a lot of fans didn't know who they were or just knew who they were but weren't quite sure, you know, how to react or weren't enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, well, Zack Sabre Jr. came out in a weird kind of point. It was like, I kind of want to watch on TV and see, I guess he must have come out right before a commercial break or maybe a picture-in-picture,
yeah.
But it's not,
yep.
You know, So, I mean, you know, and he's got cool music. Actually, it's kind of the same kind of vibe as Jamie, the second duo, Britt Baker. But, you know, he's got, I don't know, maybe just because of the bias of who I was sitting around or just talking to or being on the floor or more diehard star. That's fine. Of course, they haven't explained him at all. The average American, maybe they might remember him from the Cruiserweight Championship NXT, you know, where he did a couple matches. But, yeah, of course, they haven't really set him up anything. His calling out of Bryan Danielson was on New Japan or maybe on Twitter. So yeah, Will Ospreay is like his third appearance now, and I do think that the more mainstream audience is like, you know, I'm hearing a buzz like, oh, who is this guy? It's kind of interesting. Good body, whatever, you know, some interesting aerial skills. So I think he was fine. You know, they got their win back from the prior three-man. So I think there's something, you know, I guess it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. But here, like, they didn't really build him up. But he's been on TV like three times now, at least. And then Zack Sabre Jr. or whoever else, right, isn't on at all and isn't given any kind of lead-in. And in both instances, it's like, oh, well, you know, they're not really doing anything. But I don't know. With Will Ospreay, he's been on TV a bunch. They've kind of, you know, he's been kind of on TV for months. So I think there's something there, and he's building, I think. But again, Chris, I come into this as such a bias.
But it's all perspectives are important. It's just good to keep in mind your experience as a fan, and you are acknowledging this for sure, is not the same as everybody else's. And Tony Khan should be held to a standard of inclusiveness in a different way than they advertise, which is, are we marketing to a narrow group of hardcore fans with a great level of intense, concentrated enthusiasm and worldly knowledge, or should he be also paying more attention to growth and what it takes to get them to grow? And so,
right.
Another question I have, and then Javier, I'm going to throw to you for a question too, if you have one for Chris. But what was the buzz like for Okada coming out? And about the layers of pops for him with the music and the video, and then walking out and then entering the ring. Like, just what was the energy like in the building for that?
Yeah, it was good, and he was the one I was worried about over anyone, because I'm like, you know, he's such a god, but, you know, to Japanese fans and whatever, but I don't know that he, you know, totally leaps off the page. I mean, if he has one of his beautiful kimono ceremonial robes and I've been worried, like, if he did actually show up, you know, would it be kind of crickets, and like, would I be embarrassed for him or not, you know? You know, it was obvious someone was going to, even last week, you know, the way it was phrased, like, you know, it was clear that someone else is coming to the show. And in the moments, you know, you're looking at the beatdown and you're like, wait, who would even the odds for Hangman? And we're all just like, oh, for sure. Obviously, he's like, it was a work and he's healed, and Kenny Omega. And we're all just like, Kenny Omega, let's go. And instead, it's, you know, you get the ring coins dropping. And, you know, hey, anyone who was, like, you know, excited about Kenny Omega was probably also excited about Okada. And so, yeah, no, it was a very good pop. I would say it was, the biggest heat of the night was certainly for Christian. But in terms of just, you know, audible noise, I would think he's top three. And I would definitely say there was an acknowledgement, and again, he was the one that I was like wondering, like, hey, what, do people even know who he is, and does he really leap off the screen or in person? But yeah, people appreciate it. So and obviously he can still go, top of his game, unlike, unfortunately, Tanahashi. So but anyway, yeah, I was pleased with the pop.
Yeah, Javier, do you have a question for Chris?
Yeah, who were the other ones? Because it seemed on TV that FTR got a big positive reaction when they came out.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And, without a doubt, obviously Moxley, you know, and, of course, I guess that, yeah. Oh, you know, especially being there early, you just saw, again, here. It's like in Chicago, you know, there's just such a big Mexican fan base for Penta and Rey Fénix, and Rey was in Rampage. I hope I'm not spoiling anything. So, you definitely, especially early on, I saw so many kids and families geared up for those two and really excited when they came out. I would say that those, you know, again, one of the bigger pops was this guy, this local guy during Dark Elevation, Joey Jett, but that's when, the crowd was half full, so you could kind of actually hear if there was a coordinated push for someone.
Javier, anything else you want to ask?
Did Tanahashi, after it would go off the air, do the air guitar, any air guitaring with the crowd?
No, I was wishing. I loved when he did that New Japan Strong show over the weekend or whatever that was, and some, you know, in America, and some audience member throws him the imaginary air guitar and he starts playing, and I was hoping for something like that. I will say it was cool because even when I used to go to Japan, I don't think I ever saw him, and, I wish I did because, gosh, again, one of these things you don't notice on TV because of the camera cuts or but early in that match, he has to run a couple times, and it's just,
it's every single time I watch him wrestle. It's the first couple steps he takes. It looks so painful.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for him because he's got bad knees.
Right, and that's a known thing about him, but I've never noticed it before. Being in person without the camera cuts or whatever, but I guess he has to warm up in each match. But man, that first minute, I was like, "Oh wow! Like, did the travel exacerbate this? Is he going to be able to go on Sunday?" And then the whole second half of the match, you realize he's not running. He's just doing like jumping. When he tags out, his first tag out, he doesn't bend over. He doesn't like step over the rope. He just flops to the ground and then rolls out, and he just realized he's doing whatever he can to avoid any kind of knee bend. So that was something that popped out. Was just like, oh man, I should have seen this guy live 10 years ago, but oh well, you know.
Cool. From the traditional heel promo of Christian, talk about the heat that generated, and compare the emotion in that segment to anything else on Dynamite, and if anything else was kind of in that same category, or if everything else just felt kind of different, because what Christian did felt almost like an outlier on the show compared to most else of what we saw.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Jericho does that whether it's on television or not. And, right now, I guess the heel side, the nuclear heel heat kind of side is missing a bit with MJF gone and whatever else. But it was intense. I mean, there was maybe again, it's just your own personal, coloring your interpretation. But, it's kind of like a respect heat a little bit, like people give to MJF or whoever. And I guess I didn't fully appreciate because, you're there in person. You talk to people next to you, whatever. But I guess, it was dragging initially. I did notice, like, the guy outside of the ring, the kind of camera roadie guy, putting up a finger for, like, hey, 1 minute, and then swirling his finger around, like, wrap it up. And then, it went to Tony Schiavone for another follow-up question, a video, and then back to him. So I guess he did go over. I didn't fully, I saw online some people, like, really bemoaning the start of the promo and saying that he's, this is why Edge did all the promos, but I didn't notice that in person. I mean, there was tons of heat, and then of course when he did the after the video, and we tried to start a POS chant or this or that whatever chant, and then when he brought up the of course it was nuclear, it was great. I mean, people just were like, that is out of line. People really got upset, and more than just like the respectful kind of, boo. So it was good. Good for me. I actually, before the show, I was just, there so early. So I just wandered around. I was kind of backstage for a minute, and I saw him, and I just saw him like pacing around, and, And I was like, oh, like almost like somebody like preparing for a speech or whatever. And so I was imagining, oh, I wonder if Christian's like starting the show or this or that. But no, obviously, even though it was much later, he was like getting ready for that promo. And you do wonder, like, you know, between him and Regal, and there's a third example I'm not thinking of right now, but some of these old hands that have kind of exceeded their time limits a couple times here at AEW, and how much of that's just being, you know, ring rust or being used to being more produced or scripted. But you know, I don't know. In this case, I didn't notice that he went over. It was the crowd was really into it.
Tell us a little bit about Rampage, and I will give the obligatory spoiler warning for anyone who wants to fast forward a couple minutes here.
Good.
But tell us about it.
Yeah, there's something I really have to say about Rampage. I don't think there's – number one, I just have to say, like, I was like, this is a go-home Rampage. Like, there was, like, nothing New Japan. It was, like, kind of – it almost seemed like it was a post-show Monday, kind of like, because you know, the first match I'll just say was, and it's the only match I want to talk about. The other ones weren't really, you know, the ubiquitous hook squash, and that Danhausen wasn't even out. But the one match I just want to talk about, Phoenix versus Andrade, amazing match. God, it must have been 20 minutes. Maybe they gave him extra time because they're not going to be on the show, but. Okay, and huge spoiler, not a huge spoiler, but a big spoiler here. At the end, Roosh comes out, and at the end, he rips off his jacket, and he's wearing maybe Javier, you help me. It's either Il or it's not Los Ingobernables, it's La Facción Ingobernables, and they kind of have a silhouette of a guy, and he has a shirt, and then he gives a shirt to Andrade, and I'm like, wait a second, like, the whole reason they're not on Sunday's show is because of the CML Triple A, you know, rivalry, but now these guys can wear their old shirt, their old faction, or I guess it's like they're riffing off of that old faction. So it seemed like a big trademark, or it all been worked, and CMLL, Triple A are cool with sharing the gimmick. I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's a riff on the actual Los Ingobernables. I think that's sort of how like Penta is now Penta Oscuro to try to sneak some of that stuff through.
Okay. Well, I guess Ingobernables is not like a heavily trademarked. I mean, it's ungovernable. It's not like I guess you could have right. I mean, we had back at AJ Styles as part of the OG. Or the Balor Club, I guess. So I guess if you can do the Balor Club, you can do the La Facción Ingobernables instead. So, but anyway, that was.
And you
cool
hit that pretty good,
and
by
I
the
guess,
way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to see them. Gosh, I wish, that one of the Sunday matches that was just announced. You know, this Dudes with Attitudes, which is like the best name ever. But you're just like, wait a second. It's like Sting and Darby with members of Los Ingobernables de Japón, who theoretically would be allied with Andrade, who hates, has a rivalry with Darby. So anyway, that's kind of convoluted, but I don't know. Maybe they'll tie it all together someday in the future.
By the way, I had to look this up because I couldn't remember, but the Dudes with Attitudes were a WCW faction in the Great American Bash 1990, and they took on the Four Horsemen. And the group was Lex Luger, Paul Orndorff, El Gigante, Rick and Scott Steiner, Junkyard Dog, and Sting. So this is, again, just a little callback to ancient history.
That's cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, there was a lot of cute little things like that. And, if you're a super diehard, I was very happy. But I get it. It's, people are kind of like drowning at a fire hose of too much. And I hope the Ring of Honor split comes soon. And, you're reminded, I guess, less is more, especially, with what, I don't even watch WWE anymore. But just, what they did with Cody in the last few shows, I guess, shows that sometimes less is more, I guess. So, but anyway, I was super happy.
Chris, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you, guys.
You bet. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, we invite you to email us here at the show, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let us know what show you're going to, the date of the show. Put the city in the subject line. That helps me stay organized when getting back to you. And we'd love to have you on to do what Chris just did and share your enthusiasm or your dismay or a mix and details that we don't pick up from watching on television. All right, Javier, we've got an email. And Chris just talked about, you know, it's a good show for diehards, but not everybody is. Bassett from Pakistan says, it's been a while since I wrote in, but this Forbidden Door build has been a very, very disappointing one. I understand that certain aspects cannot be controlled, like injuries and politics, but God, you can at least do packages and promos detailing the history of the company and its wrestlers instead of Excalibur explaining why New Japan titles are governed by the IWGP board during a crazy Osprey FTR match. I don't want to focus on anything else when that match is going on, especially when he's especially with those two. What's most annoying is that in the countdown show after Rampage, they will have packages to all these matches, but it's in vain since the audience for that will be lower than Rampage and won't help much. Also, it's very disconcerting that there's no transparency in the company regarding injuries. From Matt Hardy falling at All Out and the back and forth he had, whether he had a concussion or not, to Jeff having a brain scan the day or so before the Tay ladder match, to Punk and Bryan's injuries, makes me feel very uneasy watching the show and playing a guessing game if a certain wrestler is all the way there or not. The best example being Jeff Hardy at Double or Nothing. Also, after Kenny Omega left to heel, we found out he wrestled with Vertigo. It's beyond impressive. You can manage it and have great matches, but it only takes a second or so to lose your handle on things. That's it for me for now. Hope you're doing well. A big hi to the listeners. Well, always great to hear from countries we don't often hear from. So Bassett in Pakistan, thank you. Javier, you know, I mean, I was thinking that too. The history of New Japan. What is New Japan? Like, why isn't Tony talking to people who don't know that? Because he's not. You know, I said this last couple of weeks, Dynamite, especially this month, but historically, but especially this month, it seems like it is aimed at people who vote in the Wrestling Observer Year-End Awards and hit all the winners. You know, like they know. They've got the top matches that are seven stars. Boom. I know the date. I know which one I rank first, and here's why. It's aimed at them. And there's people out there, and I'm hearing from them because we're a, you know, friendly place for hardcore and casual fans in different categories. It's not a clubhouse where you got to just be hardcore to feel like, you know, you're included and being heard. I think even explaining what New Japan is and the history of the company and how big it is would have been nice. And I think it and helpful and prudent. I think some of this is a result of Tony's instincts, but I think some of it is a paranoid, out of proportion insecurity that viewers have an ultra short attention span who are tuning into your show. Like, I just don't think everybody's waiting to just bail on the show. If you do a good job getting people excited about the main event and one other key match on the show and one key promo on the show, and you spread them out, they're going to stick around. They're going to stick around. So you can do a 90-second piece on the history of New Japan with some vintage photos and talk about the wrestlers who have gone there and the history of the company and why this is a big deal. You don't have to do an 8-minute documentary on it, but you can do more than you have. Same thing on video packages on the wrestlers. And I am very disappointed that AEW during the Forbidden Door hype, with the caveat being they had some injuries that threw some things off, but I don't see signs they would have done a great job otherwise, that they haven't just focused on three or four key big New Japan names and New Japan matches and really built them up and sort of let the undercard speak for itself. I think that would have been a better approach than what they've done. Javier, your thoughts on that email and what I had to say afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, with Jay White, I think the best promo he did throughout the entire build was on New Japan. After he won the title, he cut a promo and, took a shot at he basically said that his promo in New Japan was that he's the catalyst. He drove the elite out of New Japan, which allowed the elite to fund this company so that he took credit in New Japan that All Elite Wrestling only exists because of him. So, yep. And he kind of touched upon it today, but without, you know, you didn't get that background unless you're watching Dominion. So I think it was Dominion, right? You know, so I mean, and that was a great promo. So you're not getting the best Jay White promo, particularly when he's like being interrupted, you know, with stuff going, with other stuff going on, and you know, Hangman Page knocking the mic out of his hand. I'm like, you know, you're not letting him sell the match, and he could sell the match. He is good. I mean, you know. I hate seeming like I'm overselling him, because I know some people have overselled him and they're like, hey, you know, he's not that great. I'm like, no, he's good. But yeah, you didn't really do it, you know? One of the notes I had made, Dan O'Brien mentioning that Zack Sabre Jr. had gotten paid off by Jericho, which is something this is the first I heard of it, you know, and would have been like good for the build if that would have been, you know. But yeah, I mean, and I mentioned this, all this, they do these videos on the countdown. Those videos should just be a compilation of the stuff they've done on the show and not new content. So these, you know, whatever videos they would play, that should have aired in the first, should air on the Rampage Go Home show.
Yeah.
Some of them should air on the Dynamite. And then like the least important matches should have been on the week previous. And then you maybe expand on it maybe, and for that countdown show, but you know, yeah, I mean, just reinforce that sort of thing. And you're right. It seems like he does book for the people that, you know, he's afraid that they're gonna, you know, check their phone and turn the TV off. But you know,
just relax.
Reinforce some of this. Reinforce
relax
some of this.
And be more confident. Yeah. You know, like focus on those.
I'm serious. This Dynamite should not feel like it has more content than Rampage than Raw when Raw is an hour longer show.
Well, I don't. I mean, on the face of it, that doesn't sound bad. Like, I'm okay for a certain level of density and a certain level of every minute counted. But it does, again, the madman in the kitchen just throwing stuff in the soup as it just boils over. It's just like, I just want a sense of what Tony thinks is most important. And I want him to make the stars he signs bigger. And I want a sense that he's creating stars. And I just don't know who you point to or you go, that wrestler is a bigger star because of their exposure on Dynamite, other than simply being on national TV. But like a deliberate story arc that was told that made somebody a bigger star. Is Hangman Page bigger? Maybe, but I think it's been a little bit like looking at the stock market over 10 years. Big leaps, big drops. Darby is sort of as over now as he was back then. Like, I don't think he's a bigger star. He just grabbed people's attention right away and they went with it. I don't think Jungle Boy is a bigger star. I mean, like, who do you point to and go, oh, yeah, this TV exposure on Dynamite, there was that 3-4 month stretch where Tony just elevated them. He just doesn't do that because there's some shiny new toy to give him a sugar rush that he signs, and then he discards somebody who had momentum.
The only one I can think of is, would you put Eddie Kingston in that? I think it would be the only one of the only ones.
In a way, but what did Dynamite do to make him a bigger star, or was he just, did he just show up? You know, like, what's the term? Turnkey. You know, like, he was turnkey. Like, I mean, who showed up, and then because of Dynamite? I guess, I mean, Eddie would be Eddie's is, to be fair, as good of an example as I think I can think of. But it wasn't like Tony created it. He just sort of gave him a mic.
Yeah, and then he did climb up a little bit. But, I mean, that's what I'm saying. He's the closest thing. I mean, maybe make an argument for Sammy Guevara if you ignore the last, you know, the recent missteps.
But with Sammy, but that's a good example, because with Sammy and Ty Conti, like, what? Get behind them. Like, there, you decided to turn them heel. Now either stick with them as a pair and go all in with them. Like, they are, it's like Macho Man and Elizabeth, that, you know, in the WWF during their key growth period, every week he's out there, every week he's beating up somebody, acting arrogant, hitting his finisher, and you get to know who they are and why you want to see him get his face punched in. And every week on Rampage and Dynamite, one or the other or both, he's out there and it's about him and he's cutting promos and he's agitating and you're building up to a big match. That's just not what they do. You know, it's like, it's just, he might get some mic time on Rampage. He might on Dynamite. Now he's joined Jericho and it's just, now it just is. There's no follow-up. It's not like, wow, let's talk about what Sammy and what it means for Sammy and Jericho to be back together again. They were magic together. It was at a different time in Sammy's career. He went out on his own. For a while, the fans were cheering him. They turned against him, and for good reason, and here's why. And he and Conte are obnoxious, and he's now a champion. He's had championship reigns. Now how's the dynamic going to be different with him and Jericho? There's no peeling that onion. There's no follow-up. There's no depth. It's just on to the next thing. And now he just is with Jericho. And I just feel like just get your hands in there and just make more of this stuff. And they're not. And it's frustrating. So much of what they do needs to followed up on. Like Jake Barnett on Twitter, and somebody responded to this with a question mark. And they're obviously not a listener of this show or The Fix or reading my reports if it just seems like out of the blue. But I think there are people in echo chambers where this would sound crazy. But Jake said, guys, can we admit that this – and he's the top contributor over at ProWrestling.net and co-host on this show often, really top-shelf analyst. He goes, guys, can we admit that despite moving along at a brisk pace and having the talent occasionally transcend the booking, AEW TV has been a effing mess for a while now. And Brandon LeClaire from The Torch said, it's been cruising downhill fast since right after Revolution or so. Woods on Twitter, who liked that, said, a cursory scan of Twitter sees a lot of this with regards to it as well. I assume this is also what's happening backstage regarding it. Michael McGivern, longtime Torch reader, says it's taken a nosedive since Full Gear. Someone else on Twitter, in a language I can't read, says, to be honest here, the booking has gone severely downhill since Cody. Zach Cadorn, I know him, says, not even up for debate in my eyes. Suplex Society on Twitter says, and Sammy's a poster boy for how messy it's been. Tracy Bland says, I feel like I'm watching Mad Libs. Fun, but often makes no sense. I could go on, you know, gosh, somebody said Tony's giving Russo a run for his money. Let's not go that far.
No, come on.
I'm not willing to go that far. On this, I want to read another email. And when I say we hear from a lot of these people, I'm not kidding. Like, I don't read every email that comes in about this. And people who are frustrated aren't necessarily people who are staying up late to sit on hold for an hour and talk to us about it. But John M. From Ripon, California, VIP member, said, Wade, I feel compelled to email and give my point of view on Forbidden Door. I have absolutely zero interest in this show as of today. I will not be purchasing the pay-per-view. A little background. I'm 47 years old, and I've been a wrestling fan since 1985. I grew up on WWF and would watch the NWA and AWA when I could find it. I was fascinated by the Pro Wrestling Illustrated newsstand magazines and learned a lot from those. On to the mid-'80s, I was a big fan of the Attitude Era, and the WCW-NWO conflict would and I'd follow ECW also. Fast forward to the 2000, I continued to watch WWE even as the stories got worse. Never got into TNA, ROH, New Japan, etc. As I got older, time became less available, and nothing caught my interest. When AEW started, I was excited for another company on national TV that had a lot of buzz. I've become a big fan, but I totally dislike that they just bring guys in from other companies, and I'm supposed to know who they are and all their backstories. So these matches being announced for Forbidden Door do nothing for me. I feel I know a ton about wrestling. I subscribe to The Torch. I listen to all the podcasts. Maybe I'm classified a casual. I'm not sure at this point. I am sure I have zero interest in the show, and I wish they would just concentrate on their own weekly storylines. They've done nothing to sell it to me. I know the matches will be great, but I don't really care. I need stories and great characters to sell me, not alleged, quote, dream matches. Just thought I'd share that because I'm sure with your audience, I'm in the minority, but I can almost guarantee with a larger audience, I'm the majority. I hear you discuss the topic of the second million all the time, and I feel, though I'm a weekly viewer, I'm an outcast sometimes watching this show. Thanks for your time. I mean, Javier, that is another example and really sums up, I think, what is holding AEW back from growing despite big-name signings, being on a big cable network, and having so much talent.
I think it's even more than that. I think it's their storytelling aspect. Because I'm curious – I'm really interested in what's going to happen after Forbidden Door when – because I'm wondering how much is the New Japan talent that they have right now buoying up some of the stuff. Because once they're gone, what are you left with? Because you lost CM Punk, you lost, you don't have Bryan Danielson right now. You know, you had all these other all these other injuries. I mean, Cole's obviously coming back. So I'm curious what that vacancy when New Japan leaves, how they're going to fill that, and that's going to be like the biggest test. Because prior to this, because I mean, if you look at the card for Forbidden Door, a lot of these are actually continuations of feuds that had nothing to do with New Japan. They're just adding New Japan to it. Mm-hmm. Los Sex Gods, Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara are going up against Eddie Kingston and Wheeler Yuta, which is part of the feud they've been having. They're just adding Minoru Suzuki and Shota Umino. Okay, that's the story we've been able to follow. But then you have the whole thing with the Elite, who have been feuding with Darby Allin and Sting, yet somehow doesn't feel like they've been feuding. You know what I mean? And they're just adding Los Ingobernables and Bullet Club to this. But that doesn't feel like they've been doing that. The Malakai Black and his group, the House of Black versus Death Triangle, that feels like it's been going on for, like, what, 2 years now? Almost. I mean, did this start when we still were when we didn't have crowds? It feels like that. It feels like it's been going on forever, and we haven't had any signposting of this storyline ever, you know, moving forward, and it keeps going. The it doesn't really feel like there's any forward momentum in the storyline. So this is just outside of the new. This is outside of the New Japan stuff. What you're adding onto it. So, I mean, so I think that's a more clear issue in terms of, like, if you don't create stories and people, you know, like, you don't have any, like anything that feels like you're driving forward. And there have been stories and people, that's why people, I think, like, glammed onto the stuff with MJF, because MJF's storyline is the only time that it feels like stuff is moving forward. You know, and some of the stuff that Jericho does and some of the stuff that Cody was. And I am curious if a lot of the direction that AEW felt, you know, because that was the thing. It's like, what changed where it felt like there was a direction at some point, and then now it feels like a lack of direction, like we're just putting matches on. And it was Cody leaving. So I wonder how much influence he had beyond his little old Codyverse to, like, you know, make sure things are going in a specific direction than just, you know, all this, you know, noise. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like a lot of noise. And like, when you watch it on an independent level, like an individual level of an episode or, like, individual matches, they're good and they're great because of the talent involved. But when you look at it from, like, a bigger point of view of, like, you know, how you book from week to week leading into the pay-per-views, the last few have been not, you know, there's definitely been a downturn in terms of, like, the storytelling aspect of it.
And that's why I just, you know, next week kind of hit the reset button. I don't think tonight's rating's going to be good. You know, I just don't. I don't know what it's going to take for Tony to not make excuses and rationalizations, but accept that If the numbers back up this week, it doesn't change any of my criticism of the show, because I think they can do substantially better, avoiding some of the pitfalls and doing some of the things that I and others are expressing they want them to do. That said, if the number is low again this week, I just think it's time for him to step back and say, all right, message received. I'm a big boy, and I'm going to reach out beyond the echo chamber of people telling me how awesome it is I signed Okada, and that type of thing, and step back and try to get better as a booker. When you go from 939 and 969 and 929 and 922,000 viewers 4 weeks in a row down to 761,000 viewers the week after a show that was as heavily criticized as any show you've done, and if you think, well, that's because CM Punk left, and you have a company that has 150,000 plus people who will bail on your show because CM Punk's not on it and isn't going to be on it for a while, and Bryan Danielson's been off without explanation, and Kenny Omega's been gone for a long time without much explanation, and you've lost Cody, and the Young Bucks are good for a match here and there and in a goofy promo here and there, but aren't treated as centerpiece stars. I mean, it's time to step back and go, all right, let's take a fresh look at everything. But we'll see what the number is this week, and we'll see what he does next week. I do want to shift, Javier, to an email that points out a couple things that I think are worthy of praise on this show, which are steps in the right direction. JB from Detroit said, did you guys notice that Dynamite started off with a brief review package of what happened last week? To me, this slight adjustment carried throughout the entire show. in terms of the pacing that we've all been asking for. I was pleasantly surprised that the show didn't seem too fast-paced or stuffed with an overabundance of happenings, especially for a go-home show, in my opinion. And also credit to Meryl for having the promo chops and the personality to actually have me interested in this All-Atlantic Tournament match at Forbidden Door. So I agree with JB at the beginning. I didn't agree that it still didn't seem too fast-paced or stuffed with an overabundance of happenings. I just think there was this barrage of people coming to the ring and brawling as Excalibur was breathlessly trying to tell us who they were, which is just like cramming for a test at the last second, and nothing gets retained. Nothing stands out. And so I don't give them credit for that. But the show did open with a video package. It was super brief. I would argue too brief. But Excalibur acknowledged the Young Bucks won the AEW Tag Team titles last week. That was a big deal. And underlining and emphasizing it at the top of the show this week is a step in the right direction. I'd like to see it get more time and be talked about more. But we'd at least got a Young Bucks promo later in the show, although it was to promote in a convoluted way the Forbidden Door match. And then they did show Christian Cage attacking Jungle Boy and said they'd address that later, which is good to do because a lot of people didn't even see that because they tuned out at the top of the hour thinking the show was over before the attack happened. So more of that. I want Tony Khan to be secure that if he does a good job promoting two or three key segments on the show, people will stick around and he'll grow his audience and people will be more invested if he takes a deep breath and steps back and, you know, let's emphasize some things rather than moving on to the next exciting sugar rush. I'm using that term a lot, but I think that's appropriate for a lot of what Tony's doing. Your thoughts on what JB had to say, Javier?
Yeah, I mean, I do think the pacing was better. I'll probably a little bit higher on the pacing than you were, but it's the fact that it's overstuffed, it kind of, you know, hides it a little bit, I think is the thing. In particular towards the end, I think it fell apart a little bit more. But yeah, I did like the fact that it started with the because that was a note I meant, and I made the note that it's like, wow, is this like the longest time between a show starting and the first match? Like,
yeah, really, yeah.
You know, that was a note I had made. You know, he brought up the Miro thing. Yeah, I mean, Miro's worth his weight in gold, and I mean, I kind of don't want him to win the title because I want him involved in bigger things, and I hope this is just not a reason to give him a title and then just you know so he could say, hey, look, I got a title. I'm strong. That's my strong feeling is that they didn't want to give him the TNT title, so they made a new one for him. But yeah, what else was on that email?
I think you
hit it.
I think you largely hit it. The Meryl promo and fast in the pace of things with the video packages.
Yeah.
Okay. One more and then I'll wrap up unless I think of something else. Zach in Texas pushes back, as usual, against criticism against AEW. He says, first of all, I have to disagree with Wade's TV report at PWTorch.com that he called it a trails match. I'm going to call it a six-man match. That six-man match with Ospreay wasn't nothing. The crowd ate that match up. OC, Orange Cassidy, continues to be super over, and it was a very good match. I didn't say anything against what you just said. Also, Will Ospreay got his solo showcase last week, so he's hardly been presented as a guy. The Christian promo, that was easily his best promo that I can remember. I thought it built nicely. It started with a generic heel insult that the crowd slid into the Christian explaining his long-term plot against Jungle Boy, very long-term, and got personal with the shots at Luke Perry. It wasn't shots at Luke Perry. It was just acknowledging the poor guy died young. And ended with him turning Luchasaurus with a line about Marco Stunt. It was brilliant. As far as the baddie search, does that sound like a good avenue for Sasha Banks to come in, given that every sign points to her exit from WWE being imminent? Interesting stuff. So I want to put in context for people who didn't read my TV report at pwtorch.com. After the Ospreay match, after the six-man tag, I said that Ospreay being – my point is Ospreay being just thrown in a six-man tag match, I think, diminishes him. He should be a huge deal. So I said, matches like that, which feature a lot of athleticism at a fast pace, help the AEW brand in a generic sense, because it's certainly part of what people like about AEW. Beyond that, it did nothing. So Zach saying it was a good match, it didn't do nothing. I said, well, other than being a really good athletic match, it did nothing, because Ospreay has become just another guy the way he's being presented, and I stand by that. Being a guy who has a good singles match doesn't showcase you. AEW has plenty of cases of two people having a really good match. The idea is helping us understand who he is, what he stands for, why he's here, what quirks does he have that make us like him or dislike him beyond his mannerisms in the ring. So anyway, I won't read my whole analysis there. People can check it out at pwtorch.com. But I think that match did, again, make Ospreay seem like just another guy because he's just out there against Trent Beretta. Like, I say that with a sneer, but it's like, if you're just in a six-man tag against Roppongi Vice, you're just another guy. That's not how you make somebody feel special. You know, I mean, yeah. So anyway, Javier.
Yeah, I was fine the first time they did the match. I think it was on a Rampage. Because from the New Japan point of view, they do this, you know, they do the faction versus faction matches a lot in order to whet your appetite for the eventual one-on-one. But yeah, I did not like the way that this one was actually set up because the way he was used. It wasn't so much just the fact that he was used. I think the way he was used was not – he didn't really do anything. You know what I mean? I think this would have been one when that he should have just tagged out every single time Cassidy, you know, he should have like done something. They should have done some gimmicky thing with him, maybe rough him up or try, you know, because that's usually what they do in these multi-man tags in New Japan is that they'll use it to tell the story of the next match they're going to have. Maybe they attack his leg or Orange Cassidy's leg, so Orange Cassidy comes in, you know, hurt for the next one. There is a purpose in New Japan when they do that. This was just, like you said, it was just a match to have them in there. And, yeah, I didn't – they really should have, like, protected Will Ospreay more in this match. I was fine with Cassidy because this was supposed to be more of a showcase for Cassidy to show that Cassidy is, you know, like, worthy. But, yeah. It was, you know, I think that what they should have done is bring in Akira or somebody else from Hanari because Hanari had shown up, and he's not going to be involved in any of this. Hanari should have been the third man in that match, and Ospreay just on the outside. He's got a faction with multiple people. You know, Great O'Khan and Cobb came in at the end. Have maybe just one of them. Have Cobb in there instead of him, or Great O'Khan, all hail. You know, be in his place. You know, something like that. I would have kept Ospreay out of this one.
Or have Will Ospreay kick the ass of Fuego del Sol and show off his moveset. Show off his personality on his ring entrance, cut a promo before or after the match, and just shine a spotlight on his personality, and let that be the building block for then what you do next. Like, I mean, it's educational hearing you talk about the context, the New Japan and all that, but, like, if you're introducing Ospreay to a national audience, you find a sympathetic babyface who can bump like crazy for him, fight back, but he palm faces them and demolishes them and acts cocky in a way where you want to see somebody bigger on the roster kick his effing ass for it. You don't. I don't want to know how many 5, 6, 7-star matches he's had. Like, that's not growing your audience. Excalibur and Ross going, he might be the greatest wrestler. No, the greatest wrestler should be who's walking around with the AEW title. It should be CM Punk until someone proves different. It's not every guy who shows up is the greatest wrestler in the world or one of the top three. Jay White, Ospreay, Omega, Danielson, Punk, heck, you know, Adam Cole. Like, it's like, stop it. Tell us stories and stop telling us how great these guys are and how many Match of the Year awards they've won and how many star rating or what their average star rating is, and tell us who they are and show us why we should care and let them kick some ass and show off their moveset. Keep it simple and stripped down and build. That's what Marina Shafir should have been doing. And so, you know, and Shafir and Ospreay are very different, but the build to them and making their match count and getting people invested in their journey is not all that different. And I don't know if it's a fundamental that predates Tony Khan being a fan, and so he never experienced it, but I don't know. I just don't know. I just, like, it's too many people all at once coming in without a long-term story arc. And I understand you're like, well, we're not going to have Will Ospreay full-time after this, so why do that? I still would argue do it, because someday you might, and people are going to want to see him more if he's not standing at ringside or throwing in a six-man match or having a really good one-off dream match with Dax, which is wonderful that Dax got to have that showcase match, and it got a ton of praise. Like, I'm glad I got to see it, but I don't think it was the most prudent use of Will Ospreay if you're trying to build him up as a big deal.
Yeah, and the other thing that New Japan gets away with is because since they're heavily faction-based, the factions are the core personality of the wrestlers involved. So, so like Suzuki-Gun is a faction about people who don't necessarily care about winning. They fight because they want to hurt people.
Yeah.
So they're all under that umbrella. So, I mean, you know, once you dig in, whenever they're like one of them bubbles to the top, they're doing something with, like when it's a Tai Chi or Zack Sabre Jr., you'll get more from them. But when they're in a group, you at least know that, okay, these people like to hurt people. Zack Sabre Jr. is a wrestler who's a technical wrestler since he's going to be wrestling and people probably don't know. Who he is, because they haven't done anything to promote who he is. He's a technical wrestler who all his moves are essentially put you in a hold. He's constantly working the hold, so it's not like a boring, I'm just going to hold you. But, like, you know, he'll get you in some sort of lock and then, like, start trying to grab for your arm and stuff like that. And he likes stretching people. So, like, on a pure basis, Zack Sabre Jr. is someone who likes to hurt people by turning into a pretzel. So they have that shorthand, and you know, and then and when you compare him to Minoru Suzuki is somebody who likes to hurt you. He likes to, you know, to cause pain. So Los Ingobernables are guys who are like chilled, laid back, you know, relaxed, with the exception of Hiromu, which is kind of like the joke is that he's the guy who's like all wound up. So they're all chilled, relaxed people, and it plays into their character. Like Sonata is like, you know, he doesn't show a lot of emotion in his matches. So, but those, you know, they do that. But when you don't have that in AEW, and I thought they were going to, remember we were making fun of it, that everybody was in a faction, you know, and then like the Taz's group, you knew were like the FTW guys.
Yep.
And, you know, and you had that shorthanded. You had that shorthand of like, you know, these wrestlers all have, you know, and all that's gone. All that's been gone. All that's been like.
I mean, the Blackpool Combat Club has that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, that's like, it's the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah, and Jericho has that, which is, and that's probably why it's one of the more interesting storylines that's going on right now.
Yeah,
you know, because it's the cult of personality for Jericho versus these guys who want to fight. You know, a sports entertainment versus wrestling. So you know, and funny enough, Jericho's involved in this, which makes me think that probably that's one of the things that you know he knows how to write for himself. So I think that's why you have that in that storyline. But I think that's why, you know, Hangman Page felt like he was lost as champion. And a lot of people who don't grasp the storytelling aspect, it's like, you know, my view of wrestling, cause like, I know you know, like Todd Martin and Eric Kroll are two that, you know, when I've done when I've podcasted with Eric Kroll, I like doing that because he keeps my mind on like making money. Cause I don't see wrestling from that point of view. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cause my perspective is really more on storytelling. And in reality, like I'm almost not really a fan of wrestling. I'm more a fan of storytelling and the way that wrestling tells its stories. So, and that to me is like what's like the, like on a fundamental level is one of the things that has lately been missing from AEW. And right now, like the for me personally, like my enjoyment of AEW, that's kind of been like shellacked over a little bit with the New Japan stuff because I'm a huge fan of New Japan and like, you know, crossovers and stuff. And that's a big thing for me. So I'm enjoying it. But I'm also have, you know, the work I do outside of, you know, that I'm bringing, you know, my experience from beyond that of watching Strong and all these other all this other New Japan stuff. So I know I'm colored. So I'm colored with that. Just like it was Chris who was the guy who was there.
Yeah, that correspondent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He, you know, just like him, you know, he admitted that he's, you know, he went to see G1 matches. So I know I'm bringing that in. Not everybody expected to do that, which is kind of hard for me. Why, you know, to separate that while doing this call today, to separate the fan me from the, you know, analyzing stuff me, but I like to analyze it from a story point of view. So, and I really do think on a fundamental level that they need to really tighten that stuff up. And some of the stuff, and like the storylines that were really good were storylines that predated Tony Khan. The storyline of Hangman Page and him rising through the ranks to become champion, all that pretty much was the earliest stuff. And it was relying on stuff that had happened before AEW was a storyline because he was already on the ascent at that point. But ever since he won it, there was never, ever any story that continued from that moment outside of him being the Millennial Cowboy.
I when I talk about Tony Khan stepping back and reevaluating his approach to this in order to grow, and I think it's at a point where, I don't want to say it's needed, but it sure seems like a no-brainer to try to, just go, okay, let's rethink everything. And I would expand his booking circle to include somebody storyboarding ideas and creating sort of a storyboard or a flow chart of what are we emphasizing? What is our plan to maximize what we're doing with the people who we've decided to emphasize in our top views? If we think we're going to have 8 top matches at the next pay-per-view, how are we going to make sure that everybody who watches every week or most weeks, some of the show, all the shows, they know and storyboard it out and make sure that it's coherent, it's consistent, and that you're featuring and emphasizing things in a patient, thorough, layered, nuanced way. And it's making soup. I just throwing stuff in the pot like a madman and stirring and things are boiling over. And it's like, more spice. What does this label say? I don't care. It just looks good. It's just like, slow down, be more organized, be more professional, be more sophisticated. Tell, as you're looking for, Javier, tell stories, build characters. The wrestling is important, but it isn't everything. And dream matches, as our emailers are pointing out, isn't everything. And it is nothing to a lot of people, unfortunately. Like, to me, Jay White and Will Ospreay, should have been beating, John Silver on television, but in a way that just made you despise Will Ospreay or despise Jay White based on how they beat him and how they manhandled him and how they were arrogant about it.
They're feuding with Chaos. He could have beaten up Danhausen.
Yeah, yeah. No, you might not want to do that yet, but maybe you ought to be. You know what I mean? Maybe you ought to be. Where's Angelico? Just have him come out there and get, before you get to John Silver. Have him bump like crazy and take some losses. Someone else from Dark Order can lose first. I think there are options out there to just give showcase matches to new wrestlers where it's all about them, but you're putting them against somebody who fans have an affinity for or a connection to or a knowledge of. And if it's a babyface, they should be just kicking QT Marshall's ass in a way that makes you enjoy and appreciate the wrestler more because of how they dispatched with that. Have those 3-4 weeks where we get to know someone before you then put them in a 6-man tag or a one-on-one match with Dax that showcases them. And if I'm AEW, again, I'm storyboarding out or I'm planning out, we need to have 8 wrestlers, 4 heel and 4 face male wrestlers who we can have in that sympathetic lose role where they're winning on Dark. Maybe they're on a part of a winning 6 or 4-man team on Rampage, but mostly they're there to be put up a fight but lose to people who we want to establish. And Keith Lee should have had his run of 3-4 weeks on TV beating agitating, annoying heels who are, the Sean Spears types. And Marina Shafir as a heel should have been beating people up. So, and Christian, by the way, should just, now that he's a heel, he should be beating up John Silver next, that type of thing. So, I just think there's a whole other way that AEW can be booked where they don't lose anybody they currently have. And they don't lose a single viewer that currently is watching. But in what the way I'm saying it isn't the only way to do it, but that's a type of thought process I think Tony Khan needs to step back, expand who's in his circle of people who are contributing to his booking, and be open-minded. Don't rationalize. Don't be defensive. Don't even explain things. Just listen to new ideas and make this a better company starting next week.
And on Dynamite too. Just want to make sure because sometimes they will do some of that stuff on Dark, but if you don't refer to it, so either do it on Dynamite or show clips on Dark of Dark on Dynamite.
Yeah.
One of those two. So, it's to reinforce. It's also pacing is another issue because, I think that's my biggest issue with the Malakai Black story. It's probably not their fault because Ray Phoenix got injured, but you should have, worked around it. Instead of just putting pause on the feud and then pick it up later, pacing. Also, be nice because, I don't know. I got to look it up, but it feels like Penta's been losing a lot. He went Penta Dark. I don't think he's won since he's been Penta Dark, or Penta Oscuro.
And this is a small thing, but did we really need a promo this week from Jay Lethal talking about injured champion Samoa Joe in a match that he wants to have, or he should just be given a belt. Like, why is that on today's show? It's 2 weeks ago in the midst of building up Forbidden Door, that's fine. But just days before Forbidden Door with Blood and Guts next week, and you're giving mic time to Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal, and Satnam Singh? Like, no, you don't. And it sounds counter to some things that I'm saying, which is, you know, have continuous storylines going on. But there is a time where you strip down the show and you just focus. And that promo should have been on next week's show or the week after, once you get past Blood and Guts. And that's the type of thing that is cluttering up the show and is completely superfluous. It is not – we just didn't need to hear from Jay Lethal this week until you're – and maybe we'll find out in the next week or two that they did it for a reason and they had to do it this week. And if so, okay. You know, maybe I soften my criticism, but I would still say no. Wait 2 weeks before you get back into that and tell that story then, because there's just too much going on right now. That is an example of something that just absolutely did not need to be on the show.
Probably also the Jade Chris Statlander promos.
Yeah. Yep.
That's another one.
Yep. Yeah. Save it for next week or the week after. You've got a pay-per-view to build, and that could have been a video package. You know, on any number of matches or wrestlers that you're kind of introducing to people. And by the way, just because Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross make fun of Excalibur's breathless, frenzied FedEx guy thing 2 weeks in a row now, you know, Schiavone's like, oh, God, can you do that again? That doesn't make it okay. It's not a good idea. It's like, stop it. There are graphically pleasing ways with a good graphic department to sprinkle into the show different things. Then they kind of do it, you know, with a match graphic in the corner of the screen. Here's what's coming up later. And I'm glad they do that. And that's good that they do that. But, you know, you can show here's what's on Rampage, and you can have a graphic on the screen that is divided into four equal size squares or rectangles. And you just show the matches as Excalibur says less breathlessly, this is your Rampage lineup. And you can see all the matches at once on the screen. Two wrestlers facing each other, strip down some of the busyness of the graphic because you're showing four, you know, three matches in a promo segment perhaps to hype it, but slow down and go, here is our card for Rampage. And you don't even have to mention every match. You can just focus on the main match and let people see the other matches. Like, in other words, I'm trying to be sort of like, show I'm not just being critical. Like, I have these ideas of ways to make it better, and I don't always express them because sometimes the specifics get in the way of the broader issue of correcting something that's wrong. But there is another way to do it, and the way they're doing it is wrong, and I think they should figure out a different way to go about it. And there's many different ways to do it, but that is one of them. I think having them run down a pay-per-view and a Rampage and next week's Dynamite, and then you have the announcers make fun of it afterwards, it's just, no, why are we still doing this?
Yeah, I mean, he was tripping all over himself, and then, you know, you said, the joking about it was hilarious, but I'm like, you know, you are underlining a problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I sat here and started, analyzing Raw, and I'm like, oh, wait, we're talking about Dynamite, and I did that constantly, and people made fun of me, it might be funny, but it's something I probably should correct. You know, yeah. I'd probably get my head in the game and figure out what, you know, stay a little more focused. So, anyway. Javier, we are near record length here, but I'm so glad you're able to join me today for providing the New Japan perspective, and I really appreciate our on-site correspondence, the one who emailed in, which we encourage people to do if you can't join us on the show, on the phone, and our contributors through email and calls too. We got, I think, a good mix of perspectives, and hopefully less of an echo chamber than I think you get in other places, and it might drive some people away who just want a Homer show covering AEW and talking about how great some of the high spots were and how awesome it is that Tony Khan is giving us these dream matches. But we have not been that show from day one of Dynamite. If you go back and listen, you'll know. But I think if you actually listen with an open mind, you see that, you know, we have the best interests of AEW, as you said, Eric Crowe reminds you of drawing money. And yeah. It's not that the we're not as, you know, I come from a journalism foundation in covering wrestling, not a fan doing a podcast. You know, I mean, I come from journalism and I approached my coverage of things through the print newsletter as journalism. And I'm not a cheerleader. But I am an advocate for expressing where I think a company is not serving the fan base in a way that would help the company grow and make more money. And that's the lens through which I critique AEW.
I just wanted to put in my favorite line, and I almost lost it with this one. When Minoru Suzuki came out, JR said, "It's like having a bad injury and the doctor telling you it's infected."
Yeah,
that was great. Yeah. That was the best description of for Minoru Suzuki. But yeah, I mean, and for what you're saying, I think on an individual show level, I would have loved to have been in that crowd, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yes,
and been
absolutely.
There because it's awesome. It's an awesome experience, and the matches
like,
you're going to see is awesome. You
just
know?
Like every kid would like to go into the candy store after it closes and fill up a bag with candy and shove their mouth with candy. But it doesn't mean it's good business.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and it's like
or good
and it's the yeah, and the overall. You could do it. A perfect analogy with your candy thing, because like it's okay. You could do it once in a while, but if that's your meal every night.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
That's not healthy.
Cool. Javier, anything you want to plug?
No, I just be on the lookout for the primer for this show. I'm going to try to make sure to make it friendly for people who don't know New Japan, so spend some time talking about, you know, some of the wrestlers that are going to be involved in that. If Tony Khan is listening to this, 10 matches, I hate you. So, excuse me, got a lot. A lot of matches to go over, and I try to I'm writing it from the point of view of people who are not really super knowledgeable about New Japan, so at least you know have some idea of who Tanahashi and Tomohiro Ishii and mainly the people who you know haven't shown up on the show before because we did get some Ishii and pretty much the Stone Pitbull Stone Pitbull is all you need to know about that character. So that pretty much, if I showed you a picture of the man and said he's called the Stone Pitbull, that's all you need to know.
Javier, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thanks for everybody for listening.